You're listening to episode 12-6 of the Tick Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Desert Eagle Allen. With me tonight is Jeremy Lawman Lamont.
I'm ready to talk about Kid Icarus Uprising.
Let the uprising commence. It's funnier the first time. Sage Sam Rage Morris Green.
Hello.
I got a cursy laugh. Not with us tonight is Eric Blue Swim, who's out with a case of the Taco Bells.
Oh. So
he's got a stomach ache.
Ranch flavored.
Ew.
Yeah. Yes. So let's get into this. We got some gaming impressions to talk about. Jeremy, I want you to kick things off.
All right. Well, I would like to start with a game that is better known by other names in the Xbox circles. I was playing Urban Trial Freestyle on the PlayStation 3, and the TLDR version of this is that it's basically Trials. I talked about Trials Evolution on a previous show, and if you have any knowledge of Trials or Trials Evolution, Urban Trial Freestyle is basically the PlayStation version of that.
So is it a knockoff, or is it by Red Linux?
Red Lynx. Yes,
Linux. I just call him Red Linux?
Yeah, there's a penguin.
Yep.
There's a penguin. No, but it's almost like Control-C... Trials Evolution, Control V, Urban Trial Freestyle. Like it is in all but name, it is the same game. So if you have not played Trials or Trials Evolution on the Xbox 360, let me just give you a brief description. We've already talked about it on a previous show, so you can probably go back and listen to that, and it would essentially cover the subject. But it's basically a Joe Danger-esque kind of motorcycle platformer. Mm-hmm. This one is urban in nature, hence the name Urban Trial Freestyle.
Aren't they all urban?
They are all urban. So, yeah, and you like rocket back and forth, and you hit the gas and you hit the brake, and sometimes you'll go up, you know, the sides of buildings, and sometimes you'll get into, you know, elevators and things like that. I don't want to give this game short shrift or anything, but it is literally Trials. Mm-hmm. I played the console version. I bet it would be really interesting on the Vita. Unfortunately, it is not a cross-buy title, so the one that I got ended up being console only. Mm-hmm. And it's really good. I don't mean to say that it is not a load of fun, and you know, you get to start out with your masculine six-pack sporting, I don't even know what he is. There's kind of a story in this one where there's natural disasters going on, and one man will ride his motorcycle up the side of a skyscraper.
to save the world?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. I mean, I don't really know what he's doing, but, you know, they have different levels, you know, urban sure. levels, outdoor levels, you're riding on the tops of trains sometimes, which is kind of interesting and kind of neat. The thing is, it doesn't quite have the tongue-in-cheek sensibilities mm-hmm. of Trials. You know what I liked about Trials Evolution was every time you got to the end of a level, mm-hmm. something would squash your dude.
Right.
And it was like, you know, sometimes something would fall on him, sometimes you're like, oh, I'm safe, and then it would like eject him up through the roof or something like that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really do that here, but it has a few different modes. It has a obviously a timed mode to get from beginning to end in certain period of time. There are leaderboards and ghosts, so you can race against ghosts. And you know, in my experience, I don't know if anybody else has played this, but the leaderboards seem kind of messed up. Like there are some circumstances mm-hmm. where I would finish a level ahead of the target time, but it wouldn't show up on the leaderboards. Or sometimes I'd be, I get the feeling like more what was happening was I was racing against a time that didn't actually exist
mm-hmm.
or hadn't been loaded in or something like that. So mm-hmm. I assume that will get better, but anyway, as you go through the levels, you will collect little bags of money, or you might get, you know, special unlocks and things like that. I mean, honestly, mm-hmm. the more I talk about it, the more I just want to say you should probably just play Trials. But I mean, like I said, it's not bad. So if you don't have access to a copy of Trials or Trials Evolution, Urban Trial Freestyle it's not hard to recommend. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if it's $10 or $15. I mean, it's comparable in almost every way with the Xbox exclusive game. So
except for the humor.
Yeah, it's just not quite as funny. Like
there's no Czech hedgehogs in it.
No, I mean, they have things where people will like run away from you and accidentally drop crates and things on you and stuff like that. So there'll be people who are throwing things in your way. And you're evading police. I mean, I guess that's kind of cool, but ultimately it just means that you're kind of like rolling over some police cruiser or something while the cops like jump out of the way and they're like, "I found him! I found him!"
I should say that that's the anti-tank things in Saving Private Ryan, and that wasn't a racial slur. Check hedgehogs, by the way.
I see.
I want to do that for a checklist.
Sure, people were very worried.
But I, like I said, I didn't play the Vita version, so it, you know, there's probably some novelty to that.
Sure,
to that version. So for the two kinds of people who have not played Trials or Trials Evolution, and people who have a Vita and are interested in that kind of game on the Vita. Mm-hmm. Urban Trial Freestyle. It kind of rolls off the tongue in a way that Trials kind of doesn't, so I guess it has that going for it. Urban Trial Freestyle.
I'm waiting for the Suburban DLC.
Yeah, that, or the...
Ticket to the Mall.
I'm waiting for the underwater version.
Yes.
Ice level.
The aquatic.
Lava level. Yeah, there you exactly. go. So we'll get all that stuff.
You know, I'm looking at pictures. It is actually urban. They're at one point, you are in the middle of a office.
Yeah, like you drive, and they do have, you know, cool. when I was playing Trials, I don't really remember having a lot of branching paths in Trials. Is that something that you recall? It's been a while since I've
no.
played Trials.
No, yeah, there's not.
In this, they actually do have things where if you can get it just right, and they have a really quick reload time, just like Trials did, so you can basically hit the triangle button and go back to the last checkpoint. In fact, were there checkpoints in Trials? It seems like there were.
Yes.
Yeah, so this also has
That's
checkpoints.
That's probably to avoid litigation, the branching pathways.
Yeah, man, I don't know.
But
dude.
You know what?
Like,
I'm looking at the look of the game, and it has that kind of washed out, just aesthetic. Like the color palette just looks like.
It's like the Kill Zone of.
Yeah. Yep. And Trials. even the font looks very similar. So.
It is. It is super similar. I mean, I don't know what else. That's the thing. Is like as I started talking about this, I'm like, shit. I don't know if I've got enough to say about this because it's basically Trials. but it's fun though. Sure. And like I said,
and
so
it's
there,
for
there,
Vita, which is cool.
And it does have. And there is a Vita version. So the other thing I mentioned that there are the time trials, but then there are also stunt levels where it's like jump the highest, jump the farthest. You know, spin the spinniest, you know, those kinds of things. So
jump shark.
Yeah, exactly. But it's, you know, have you ever watched videos of people playing Trials? I mean, there are some people who are super hardcore about it.
I can't because I get angry that I don't have that level of patience and ability to sit down and master the game at that
point. Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, so one of the things you figure out is don't always be jamming the gas. I mean, that's one thing about Trials. But there are people who can, like, jump the thing just by, like, rocking it back and forth, and they'll jump and hop over things. On this, I've gotten stuck on crates, there, you know, and they ramp it up pretty quickly to where you have to, you know, like, there was a level I was playing just last night where they you know, jump you up the side of a ramp, but there is a stack of crates there, and unless you clear that stack of crates, I think they want you to, like, land the middle of your bike on the top of these crates and then kind of fall over with it onto the next thing. But if you don't make it up there, I mean, you stumble around at the bottom of the crates until you just give up or, you know, do something stupid. But really similar. So like I said, if you haven't played Trials, if you don't know what I'm talking about with Trials, take a look at it. It's really fun. If you've never played Trials and don't have an Xbox and don't have access to it, Urban Trial Freestyle is easy to recommend to those folks. Or,
15 on PS3, $10 on Vita.
Yeah,
not cross-buy.
Yeah, exactly. It's not. So I kind of found that out the hard way. But the Vita version, I can't really vouch for. But considering some of the cross-platform stuff where, you know, Super Smash Brothers, Jesus, PlayStation All-Stars and you know, Sly and some of those where it basically is pretty much a one-to-one, you know, I imagine it would probably be similar here. So
very cool.
Urban Trial Freestyle. Also on...
It's the grunt cast.
So also on the PlayStation, I have been playing Ron Gilbert's The Cave.
Is that the official name? Ron Gilbert's The Cave?
Ron Gilbert's Cave? American McGee's Cliff Bleszinski's The Cave.
What do you think about auteurs that put their name in the title, Jeremy?
You know, I think we could do with more of that.
Really?
Yeah, really? I mean, the thing is, it's a team effort. I mean,
so Robert Allen's Tech Gaming Podcast is cool.
No. I don't know if it would be cool.
No.
I mean, it can go both ways, too. American McGee's got to be careful what he puts his name on these days. So Robert Allen's Tech Gaming Podcast.
Bad Day. What was that, Bad Day LA?
Bad Day LA. Yes. Yeah. But I like American McGee. But on the one hand, game development is almost more than anything. I mean, even in movies, you have a director who has the vision and who frames everything in a certain way. And, you know, Steven Spielberg gets to attach his name to it or whatever because of his particular vision. And I don't even know
But it's not usually called Steven Spielberg's, you know, Indiana Jones. Like, it's called Indiana Jones.
Well, it's not called that in the title, but, you know, I like... What was I reading about the other day? Robert Zemeckis, who directed Back to the Future, Steven Spielberg presents Back to the Future. Steven Spielberg somehow was, you know, in the. I think he had fuck all to do with it. I don't think he did anything. So anyway, and I think that there are. I mean, we who are plugged into the, you know, the gaming culture. I think we sort of know some of these names, but they don't really tend to get out that much. And I don't think it would hurt anything to put, you know, a creative director's name on it or the visionary, whoever that person is. I don't see why not. I mean, even people like, you know, Will Wright or, you know, the people who are the staples in the game industry, nobody knows them. Everybody's heard of Steven Spielberg, but there are some other issues, I guess, with that, too. But anyway, bottom line is I don't mind. I wouldn't mind if it were called Ron Gilbert's The Cave.
How about Ron Gilbert's Cave?
Ron Gilbert's Cave? I don't know.
Would you venture in?
I would probably wear rubber.
Ew.
I love it. Tell me about the cave. Tell me about the cave.
The cave, by Ron Gilbert is a, kind of in the way that adventure games, you know, for example, Tim Schafer, a lot of his most recent games have been adventure games that were also X. Like, Psychonauts was an adventure game that was also a platformer.
Yes.
And Brutal Legend is an adventure game that is also a RTS, or, you know, whatever. The Cave is kind of a, almost, what would you call the Lost Vikings, where you
puzzler.
Have multiple, kind of a puzzler, so an adventure puzzle-y kind of, I think that's probably fair. So The Cave is an adventure puzzler, and you have a roster of up to 7 characters, and you have to pick 3 at the beginning. And the idea is that the characters, everybody throughout time has, not everybody, but people throughout time have come to visit this cave. And the cave is also the narrator. So he talks about, I am a talking cave. That's right. And he has the whole story of why he's the cave. And these characters are coming to the cave on a journey of sort of self-discovery and puzzle solving.
Can we backtrack a second? Because you said the numbers, and that was kind of a sticking point for me. 7 characters, you can take 3. So you have 2, you know, 2 sets of 3 unique characters, and then your last playthrough, obviously, you want to play through the game multiple times. You're stuck with 1 new character and characters that you've already gone through the game. Do you take issue with that at all, Jeremy?
I would say that theoretically that's what can happen. I wonder how many people are actually going to play through this game 3 times.
Okay.
I would say that it's... I don't think that that's necessarily how you'd break it down. If you play it the first time with 3 and you really like one set, like the Creepy Twins or whatever, you might keep those and then do a new 2 and then use 1 and then do 2 new ones.
Here's the thing, because I did actually play it 3 times, is that the puzzles aren't that fun to play through again.
So that's the thing. That's kind of my problem with the game in general.
Yep.
So let's talk about the characters. So all of the characters have different abilities. So everybody can pick up items and use items. And so as you come across things, you actually have stuff that you can pick up, like, I don't know, like a pickaxe or something. I can't even think of anything now that I'm trying to think of it. But
parts,
just random
parts,
bits. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, gears or whatever. So just stuff you can pick up. And any character can pick something up. And theoretically, if you can get them to where that thing needs to go, they can also apply the device, whatever it might be. They can also trigger things like pull switches, levers, crank wells, you know, things like that. But then they'll also each have a unique power of their own or a unique ability. So the playthrough that I am sort of still working on is the twins who have an ability to, I don't even know why they can do this. They don't really explain some of this stuff too, but they're sort of like scary Tim Burton, like,
yeah, very much,
you know, kind of creepy, you know, Victorian children. And they do. You can do this thing if it, on the PlayStation you hit the triangle or whatever, you know, whatever platform you're playing on. It's on PlayStation, Xbox, PC. And the twins, for example, will sort of, they'll have like a ghosty second pair of twins that kind of floats there. And so, for example, if you're, like I mentioned earlier, pulling a lever. So their little secret advantage that you eventually sort of figure out is if you have them pull a lever, you can then trigger their power and they will hold the lever, but then they will also, it's like this astral projection thing. Mm-hmm. So the ghosty version will stay there and hold the lever while you can prance around and do whatever. So you actually kind of get a twofer in terms of being able to press and hold, you know, different switches or buttons or panels or things like that. So the, let's see, the time traveler can phase through things.
Did you play with the time traveler, Jeremy?
I did play with the time traveler, yes.
Oh, God. Okay. That was the one character I just had serious issues with.
Really? Issues? Like you had...
Of the puzzles, I don't want to give anything away, were just a little too convoluted with the time traveler. Where actually, you really have to think, it didn't mesh with
I figured out what was going on, I thought it was actually really clever.
Okay.
And we'll talk about that, but you're right. That's one of the things about talking about the cave that makes it kind of difficult, is that as you start talking about things, you kind of don't want to spoil it, and it's really clever, too. I mean, the cave sort of narrates for you as you're going through things, and the idea of this is that each of these characters, they find something dark inside themselves. So where, you know, you sort of pick the characters because they're interesting, and you find out that they all have kind of this little dark backstory that's, you know, like the twins are sort of kind of murderous, and the time traveler is kind of jealous, and the monk, which was the other character that I picked,
One sympathetic. Who is it? The hillbilly. I didn't feel bad for the hillbilly.
Feel bad for the hillbilly?
Well, no. I'm sorry. I did take that back. I did feel bad for him. The other ones, I was just kind of an observer, and
like he's not a jerk, or
he's not a jerk. What does he want to find love?
Probably,
okay.
Probably.
But the other ones, they have something about them where there's elements in the game where they get their comeuppance.
Yeah. And
am I going too far, Jeremy?
No, I think that's probably fair.
And with the hillbilly, with the southern gentleman, I didn't quite feel that. I felt bad for him. I sympathized.
I think the best villains have a little bit of an empathetic property to them. So, essentially you're sort of going through it's 2D, and you're going through a kind of a platformy, side-scrolling, you know, gate closed to different, you know, they sort of section you off into different things until you can find a particular multi-piece puzzle, and a lot of the puzzles are sort of, you have to do things simultaneously, like one character, and you toggle through them as well, so you basically switch back and forth between these three different characters, and apparently there's a multiplayer element to this. I've been playing it by myself, but I guess you can have up to three people actually playing simultaneously, and I'd kind of actually really like to try that, but which actually, I guess, by the time you hear this, the game may actually be available on PlayStation Plus free. So I think that's coming out either Tuesday or maybe later this month, I think. But one of the things you mentioned was the puzzles. You know, like puzzles in general, it's never like, wowee, that was a great puzzle in general. But you're kind of right. With the cave, I kind of felt like it was a little more of a chore sometimes to figure these things out. A lot of the puzzles are location-based. Like, you have to kind of figure out, okay, I need to do this thing over here while this person does this over there. So there's kind of a multi-part element to it. And if you're going through trial and error like you do with most puzzles, I mean, the things don't generally just leap out at you and it's immediately apparent all the time what you need to be doing. But if you're playing by yourself, as I have been, you're sort of doing like three times the traversal. Like, these people don't move fast through the cave. Mm-hmm. So you're jumping, climbing on something, you realize you get up here and you think, oh, you know what, actually, I guess I needed that thing that I dropped all the way down, or that the other character is carrying, so I'll have to move that person up. Oh, now wait, now another person needs to be down here to step on this button while I'm doing this other thing. And I felt like there was more rearranging than I felt was really enjoyable.
I didn't find the platforming particularly interesting.
Yeah, no.
There was no threat to it. Yes, you could die, but you were instantly respawn, and there was no reward. You know, to the platforming, if you made a really good jump, and none of the jumps were really that difficult.
Yeah.
I don't know. There was no threat to it.
Yeah, and
not even like the I know that certain people's storylines have elements that will then sort of become a element engaged in your story, but those things mm-hmm. don't actually make it scary or threatening.
No, I was just talking about the mechanics themselves. Like, for me, I thought platforming, I enjoy a good platformer, and I want to have fun with it, but this one just felt like I was schlepping from point A to point B, like, all over the place.
It has platforming elements, I guess, but it's not really a platform.
Yeah, if you're thinking Mario or something, you're in a different castle.
It's a lot more like The Lost Vikings. If you ever played The Lost Vikings on SNES or whatever it was.
Yeah, Interplay, right? Yes.
Yeah, that's right. And
can you name all three of the Lost Vikings?
Olaf, Sven. No, no Sven.
Sven, Olaf, and
Ollie. I am Ollie. He is Sven.
Who has the shield?
Asterisk. Asterisk.
Okay. Asterisk. Yeah. Obelisk?
Yeah. No, but in that same way, like, the Lost Vikings aren't really like what I would call a platformer, but there's a lot of like jumping and going around on 2D environments and stuff like that. So it's kind of the same thing, and that's not really the point of the game either. But the thing that I found kind of limiting about it was that in the sense that it is an adventure slash platformer, it wasn't really a great platformer, and it kind of also wasn't really a great adventure kind of game either. How do I put this? Like, well, okay, one of the great things about adventure games, like a traditional adventure game, is that you usually have at any given point two or three things that you might kind of be mulling over in your head as you're doing something. With this, if you get stuck on something, you're pretty much stuck there. Like, there's not really a lot you can do to, oh, I'm going to go work on this other thing until, lightning strikes my brain or something like that. So I found that as I was playing through, I think I got stuck really terribly three or four times. And eventually, I mean, there is a satisfaction element to where once I figured something out, like you mentioned the time traveler. And I think, let me just mention the time traveler without really spoiling anything, the time traveler puzzle, because as you go through your playthrough of the cave, each character gets their own little segments. Like, there's a place where you kind of figure out the backstory of, you know, this particular character, and there's a little puzzle that's kind of unique to them, and the other characters may help out, or they may be kind of on the periphery, but this is specifically the place for the knight, or this is specifically the place for the time traveler or whatever. And the time traveler has sort of an overlapping, like, the level is the same, but you actually travel through different periods, solving these sort of trans temporal puzzles. And it starts to make sense too. I mean, there are some puzzles in particular where, what happens to a dinosaur after millions of years? Well, such and such happens. And once you kind of figure out like what you're trying to do, some of the puzzles start to make sense. But just generally speaking, I kind of felt like it was, well, let me try using this thing over here, and let me try using that thing. And eventually, I mean, to their credit, the puzzles weren't ever totally obtuse. I mean, there are some adventure games where, you know, something else I've been playing lately, and I didn't want to talk about it on the show, but I've been playing for the first time The Longest Journey, which is the Dreamfall, the Dreamfall chapters things are right now getting a lot of publicity on Kickstarter. But I'm playing the Longest Journey, and there is a puzzle in The Longest Journey that apparently is pretty infamous, where you have to use a rubber duck, an inflatable rubber duck, and a clamp to fish a key off of an electrified rail. And the way that you do it, like, even that sounds pretty obtuse, but the way that you do it is even weirder than that. And so there are some puzzles like that that are just famous for being completely backwards. Nothing is really like that in the cave. I mean, eventually everything kind of makes sense, sort of in reverse, once you figure it out, like, oh, yeah. You know what, that actually really did make a lot of sense. I should have figured that out. But in actual practice, moving forward through those puzzles, you kind of end up just banging your head on something until you get the right combination, and maybe like right before you're like, ah, I know what I need to do. So there are those moments, and when you solve those puzzles, it is very satisfying, but it's not what I would call like great fun. One thing I will say about the cave, though, is that it is super quotable. I was looking beforehand because there were a couple of quotes in particular that I wanted to use on the show, but nobody's really written these things down, but there are some pretty quippy little nuggets of wisdom in the cave, and I don't want to spoil anything like that. Not, you know, aside from the fact that I can't remember them, but it definitely has an element of humor that you'll definitely recognize from things like Maniac Mansion or you know, any of Monkey Island or some of those kinds of things. Like I do want, there's one in particular, one joke that I was agape at this, where you come across the bones or the remains of previous, you know, characters that have come to the cave that you never met, and there's one that's a clown. Do you remember this? And you can actually start, you can honk the clown times, and suddenly you can't honk him anymore, but you notice that the tag over the clown is aroused clown.
Yeah.
Because you were honking his nose, and I guess that aroused the clown. anyway.
That's weird.
It is really, weird.
It's got some kind of dark funny moments.
It is dark and funny. And honestly, the cave as the narrator actually has a few really funny moments too. Just
actually a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, just
and he does it in this Twilight Zone, what was the host? Rod Sterling kind of voice that really nails it.
Yep, absolutely. And so from that standpoint, it's fun to listen to, but I will say that I have returned to the cave to kind of, you know, push my way through it purely because of the pedigree of the studio and the you know, the creative designer Ron Gilbert. Beyond that, it's a little bit tough to really recommend strongly. I guess as I have said for other games in the past, free is probably the right price for the cave.
Oh, Jeremy. But well, I agree with you on this.
It's just that, I mean, I wouldn't go out of my way to play the cave, you know?
I didn't have a fun time with it. I think you sounded like you had a little bit more fun than I did, except for the writing.
Really?
except for the writing, it was difficult for me to get through. I really wanted to turn it off.
But if that, though, is, you know, and I know that there are people out there who really kind of enjoy the, you know, the item-based puzzles and those kinds of things, it's good from that standpoint, and I applaud that they've tried something like this.
Right.
And, you know, I feel like it's worth a try if, you know, if you're on PlayStation Plus. There is one thing about the game.
Oh, no,
what's that?
You'd be a masochist, sorry.
Yeah, you might be a masochist. I noticed, though, I don't know what platform you played on, but the description for the cave, if you look on the in your account, in the media files, it says that the cave uses the six-axis. It says six-axis motion control.
I played on 60. I didn't see that.
I wonder what the six-axis portion is. Wonder about.
Could you move it? You know how you kind of frame the action? Can you move that around a little bit?
I noticed. I mean, I was tilting that thing, and I don't know if it's a typo or what. But if you're out there and you play the cave on PS Plus and you figure out what the six-axis component is, I'd really like to know, because I'm actually a big six.
It's not an update thing. Maybe you don't have the updated version of whatever.
What I'm referring to is specifically the like if you go to your downloads list and it gives you a description, you know, for 1 to 3 players.
Right.
Traverse through the cave as you da 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 da, you know, requires this much hard drive space, and there's one there that says six-axis motion sensitive, and I don't know what that is. So,
I played on 360. I did notice a few frame rate difficulties during the platforming. It was like the engine. It looks good. It's a good looking game, but every once in a while it would slow down when I was hustling along there.
Yeah. I'd think. Technically proficient for what it is.
Too nice, Jeremy. What else did you play?
The cave may like the cave. Yes. The last thing I played was
the allegory of the cave.
Yeah, the Plato. The last thing I played was also kind of I'm kind of on a lukewarm streak this time.
That's
because
fine.
The last thing I played was Guardians of Middle-earth.
Okay.
Guardians of Middle-earth, and I think I've made my viewpoints clear on the MOBA genre on the show in the past. I'm not a fan of the MOBA. And
did
I have,
you like, what was it, Awesome Knots at all?
Awesome Knots is pretty cool.
Okay.
And,
would you put that in the MOBA?
Yeah, oh, definitely. Okay. Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, the only thing that's different about Awesome Knots is that it's a 2D thing instead of 3D. Yep. And it has this great theme song. Awesome Knots!
You're probably going to pay him for that little bit. That was too close.
It was close. So Guardians of Middle-earth, I wanted to try it because A, it was also free on PlayStation Plus, and B, I may not enjoy playing MOBAs, but I can respect them. And, I mean, there are a ton of people playing League of Legends, obviously. There are, if you ever look on streaming services, there are always tournaments going on. There's professionally, you know, professional commentators out there explaining why this lizard guy is going to gank this other dude and things like that. And, I mean, there's just a lot of activity in that space. And more coming out, you know. I mean, Dota 2 is still kind of in beta on Steam. Heroes of New Earth is big. There's Sins of a Dark Age by the Ironclad guys are coming out with one. That one's in beta right now. Awesome Knots. I mean, just all kinds of stuff. People play MOBAs, and for me, MOBAs are. I don't want to editorialize too much on MOBAs, but I think I figured out MOBAs. To me, a MOBA, which stands for Multiplayer Online Battle Arena, which is kind of a generic term, but that's how people associate these kinds of things. So a MOBA, first off, is just really quick description, is generally you have, it's a multiplayer game where it's sort of a RTS-like environment. You control a hero character, and then the map will automatically spawn little guys to send to the other to the other side, you know, and you have no control over them. They automatically come on a timer, and they'll just, you know, they're basically expendable dudes that you sort of take advantage of as they, you know, clash against the enemy guys or against the enemy heroes. And you have little buffs and things that you can get, and everything is very micromanagey. Like, the buffs that you get from different spells and things, it's like, you know, 2.5 seconds of this, 2.8 seconds of this. There are potions and items and just all kinds of things. And it's all, you know, DPS, damage per second, and you know, just all kinds of, you know, very, very minute little details to it. So I've heard Guardians of Middle-Earth described as my first MOBA. And,
yeah. Sounds like Fisher-Price.
It is. Well, see, and the thing was that really attracted me, because MOBAs are really difficult to get the hang of, because your character, your hero character typically in a MOBA is not a tank. You know, you are pretty fragile, and aside from the creeps, the little automated characters, there are towers. And the goal is eventually to break through the towers to get to the juicy innards of the enemy team's territory and destroy their capital, basically. And your character cannot withstand towers. Your character can't withstand a wave of creeps for, you know, too long. And everything is very twitchy. Like, remember in StarCraft how they talk about the number of APMs, like actions per minute or whatever it is, or actions per second? And it's very much like that, where you basically want to wait until the last possible minute. Like, you don't want to stick your neck out to be the one taking the damage. You want your little guys to take all the damage. So you kind of wiggle around in the periphery of battle. You just, if you're playing on a mouse and keyboard game, you know, you kind of click, 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 and just kind of wait and kind of toggle back and forth, kind of like step back and forth, until you can reach in and kill one of the enemy dudes and get money for it. And there's this particular rhythm to MOBAs where... You really, it's very Sun Tzu. The thing about Sun Tzu was he was always like, you know, just don't stick your neck out. Like, if I was going to do the, you know, the Cliff Note versions of The Art of War, don't stick your neck out is basically what it says. And it's very much like that. But the problem is, for me, I really want to go in and, like, kick some ass. I want to have fun. I want to go and, like, throw my weight around and start fighting guys. But that is a surefire way to die. If one or two of the enemy guys sees you doing that, and, you know, you get little unique powers that can do things like freeze you, or they call it, I can't remember what they call it, root you in place, and then you're basically dead. You're dead in just a matter of seconds. And that happens to me over and over. So Guardians of Middle-earth, so that is sort of the overview of MOBAs to me. So MOBAs are basically designed to be not fun to new people. Which I realize is kind of unfair, but sue me, whatever. So Guardians of Middle-earth is a MOBA that is designed with a console in mind. So they have done away with items. So in most MOBAs, a staple of the MOBA is items, where you go to a shop and you buy particular, you know, different combinations of boots and armor and weapons and things like that that give you incremental little increases. They've done away with any of that. Guardians of Middle-earth, of course, uses the Lord of the Rings license. And this is Warner Brothers. I think this is the second Warner Brothers game. Yes. Used to be that EA had the Tolkien license, but Guardians of Middle-earth, and what was the one before it? War in the North, I think, was the other one, which I never played, and I supposed to be pretty good. And they do a really good job. Actually, that was part of what attracted me to it, was the IP in this case. Like, I'll admit it, I like some wizards. So I would choose Gandalf, for example. And they have a lot of characters in this, too. So sure. One of the staples of MOBAs is the characters. And usually there are rosters of, you know, 100 rotating characters, and that's one of the big draws in free-to-play MOBAs is, you know, pay a couple of dollars and you get to keep your hero instead of having him rotate out at the end of the cycle or whatever. But it kind of works out to be, so most of the time it's mouse and keyboard and there's a lot of click, 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 but in this, they kind of went with like a twin stick sort of layout where you, of course, you'll move with the left stick and then you sort of angle your attacks with the right stick. So you have this rotating circle and this sort of arc, this pie chart death that you wheel around yourself. And
pie chart sounds fun.
Pie chart is fun. So, you know, you're this little Pac-Man kind of going. No, but there's an angle of effect of your attacks. And so you can also get different little abilities, like Gandalf, for example, has a defensive spell that will either absorb, you know, X amount of damage or X amount of seconds, whichever comes first. He'll have an area of effect damage spell. He has a thing where he can do fireworks and stuff like that, which is, you know, it'll also root people in place and things like that. So all of the combinations of powers that everybody has sort of fit a particular role, and they have a particular effect on enemies or on friends. You can also do one thing.
Is there friendly fire or just defensive?
No friendly fire. Friendly fire. So if there's an effect on a friend, it's usually a positive.
Okay.
Protection. Defensive. Right. Yeah, exactly. Or healing, for example, some of those kinds of things. And then different character types. And forgive me, I don't remember all the different character types of this, but some characters are just naturally good at attacking towers or attacking creeps or attacking enemy characters. And so there are also things called commands that have a super long cooldown time. Like I was playing around with a healing command, but it takes like 3 minutes to be able to fire off again. So there's not a lot of healing. There's a lot of dying and respawning.
One question I had, does it make sense with the lore? Like, you know, who you're fighting, the different characters, does it mesh with Tolkien?
Well, I mean, kind of. I mean, I actually found that I thought it was a good use of the IP because the towers are very like Gondorian sorts of towers, and the guys who are going out are, you know, little warriors of Rohan or whatever.
Sure. Can you be an Ent?
Actually, you cannot be an Ent. Let me clarify that, because I'm sure there's probably a Treebeard character. They give you a limited roster of characters, and actually on the console they are rotating out. From what I can tell, this is a live game, so that it is not just like a fire and forget console game. It is getting regular updates or regular rotations of characters as well. They have special characters of the week who get particular bonuses, and I guess they encourage you to play with those. And in general, they encourage you to play with other people. Now, up to this point, I've basically gone out of my way to play solo because, again, knowing me and MOBAs, and the other thing about MOBAs, I think everybody kind of, there's this sort of cliche of the genre, which is that you basically get balled out constantly by your own teammates for feeding or for, you know, just basically being terrible. And so they are going out of their way. You have to actually go through a couple of menus to get to playing just with the AI. But I fought the good fight and I've been playing only AI so far. In terms of using the IP, I mean, it seems all right, but I mean, it's mostly like everybody picks some characters that you like and, you know, go to town. So, from that standpoint, it's not like it's going to be a, you know, recreation of the the Battle of, you know, Mordor or whatever. But
right.
But in terms of the way they use the powers, the way that they you can also upgrade your units. So the creeps start out as just kind of a low level, just fodder soldiers, but you can also upgrade your own towers. And there are different lanes, and what I mean by lanes is there are different paths that go from one side of the map to the other. And creeps, your little dudes, will automatically be assigned or will follow a certain path. And so you can upgrade towers that are along a particular lane, and they will turn into things like Ents. So if you choose to upgrade a unit to a... I can't remember what they call them, but they're basically, you know, powerful against structures. Mm-hmm. Then you have this big hulking Ent if you're on the good side, or it turns into a big, I think it's a troll if you're on the bad side. And then that becomes a particular, target of opportunity for the opposing team, because they're going to want to try and stop that thing before it, you know, because not only is it going to be doing damage, but there's another one that's going to be coming down the pipeline soon, so you don't want those guys to stack up on each other. But there's a so far in this, I have found, having played MOBAs on the PC and now having played this, I found that they've actually done a really good job balancing this for the, I don't want to say for the console crowd, because it's simplified, but it's not dumbed down, I would say. And I think I had to walk a pretty fine line for that. But I have found that in general, one of the neat things about MOBAs that, you know, if you're watching people who know what they're doing, there is a very distinct sort of ebb and flow to the action. So as one group gains an advantage, they're able to push the opposing team further toward their end of the map and maybe do some damage to a tower. When the fallen characters respawn and come back, they now have an advantage because they're fresh and ready to go, so they'll push those characters back to the other side. So one of the things that people really like about MOBAs, but that I kind of tend not to like so much, is that it's the winning is usually in the very fine details. Like, it's amazing to watch a commentated game of League of Legends or something, where you're just watching these guys and it looks like a little RTS game, and suddenly one guy fires off, just, you know, stuff starts glowing in places or fire comes up and they're like, oh my god, that's a huge move, that's huge, and you're like, what just happened, I don't even know. And that kind of happens here. Like, I've found that you know, in just a moment's notice, one team can get an advantage, but it's not immediately crushing to the opposing team. It's a little bit like a seesaw, and sometimes you can sort of find that, you know, one team is slowly gaining an advantage over the other team, and every push they push a little further and further and further. And it seems like there are ample opportunities for the opposing team in Guardians of Middle-earth to regroup and to, you know, push the other team back. And so you never really feel like you're being totally defeated. In fact, they track your stats, the number of kills, the number of deaths, the number of assists. And I found that I could still, and again, I'm playing against AI, so this is all, you know, this is me splashing around in the kiddie pool. But I found that even though my death ratio is high, which it always is in these games, I was still getting a lot of kills. It seems like, and all of that was just to say that I feel like they have balanced. There's a lot more character-on-character interaction in this, mm-hmm. It seems to me. So that you're doing a lot more combat against the opposing heroes, it feels like. And so a lot of it is just managing cooldowns and making sure to fire off the right effects at the right time. You know, in conjunction with whatever your allies are doing. And just to kind of know where to place those things, you know. If you've got an area of effect, like Gandalf has his fireworks, you know, you want to try and stick your neck out, or I would, and, you know, again, I would die a lot, but I would try and get a little bit, you know, into enemy territory from the fray, so I'd be kind of exposed, but I would be, you know, in a position to fire off this particular ability that would root everybody and would allow people to, you know, I think it would actually silence them. I don't think it roots people. I think that one would silence people, so they couldn't fire off their abilities for a few seconds. And if everybody else was ready or was ready to push right at that moment, you could get two or three kills and then really start to press the advantage and you know, get to the other side of the map. They have a pretty good number of maps. Eventually you can do loadouts. So they don't do items, but they do let you, after you level up a character a certain number of levels, they do let you have kind of a, in addition to your abilities, in addition to your commands, they give you loadouts with things like healing abilities and things like that, healing potions. So the more you play it, obviously, just like a lot of games of this sort, the more effective you can be with that character. So I don't know how they do, and again, I didn't play with any other actual human beings. I don't know how they handle what do they call it, matching. What am I trying to say here? Where they match people with the same ability? I don't know how they handle
matchmaking.
Yeah, matchmaking. I don't know how they really handle matchmaking and if that is really effective or not, but it always makes me nervous in games like that. You know, whenever you're playing Call of Duty or something like that, when you've got people who are, you know, level 48 and they've got, you know, all of the streak unlocks and things like that and the helicopters and you've got your pea shooter, that always makes me a little nervous, especially in a game like this where, again, it's really not super newbie-friendly. But as long as you're willing to press through it, I could see that I kind of, you know, for all the stuff that it sounds like I was negative on Guardians of Middle-earth, I kind of want to go back and play it more, and I kind of would like to play with other people. I'm just nervous to play with strangers, because I just don't need that. But generally speaking...
Did you try at all, Jeremy?
No, I didn't. No. I did not try with a human being at all. It was totally AI for me.
Okay.
So, like I said, it's me splashing around in the kiddie pool, so for what that's worth, there may be a total human dynamic that I'm completely missing here, but just in the mechanics of it and the way that they've sort of put this together. Like I said, I think it's pretty streamlined, and I think it's easy to grab. I feel much more comfortable with the basic idea of Guardians of Middle-earth than I did in, you know, 5 or 6 matches of Dota 2. Even now, I still don't feel like I'm quite getting the idea with Dota, or that I can really be an effective Dota player. With Guardians of Middle-earth, though, after playing a few matches, I kind of feel like you can be competent and be effective, and as long as you understand, again, the idea that, you know what, you just need to really bide your time before you try and make any big moves. I guess when I play games, I'm not really the kind of person who likes to hang back in the crowd and wait for my chance. I like to jump out and do that stuff. And if you can learn to suppress that instinct and really just wait for your chance to you know, contribute to the team, whatever that effort might be.
Right.
I think it does a better job of teaching you to be that way than maybe some other games in the genre. So as the first,
combat celibacy.
A little bit. Like, you just have to just cool your jets for a minute and just, you know, wait for the right moments and
the big opportunity too.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, that, like I said, in PC MOBAs, you know, having to wait for, I mean, there's all kinds of little subtle things like denials where you kill one of your own creeps to stop the enemy guys from getting the coins for it. I mean, just super, super little nitty picky little details. That just never felt fun to me, but with something like this, I feel like there's more of a chance for people to get into that. So if you've ever played League of Legends or Dota 2 or Heroes of New Earth or whatever, and you got chewed out by people on your own team because you're a noob or you don't know what you're doing or whatever, try this out. You know, like I said, it may not change your mind about anything, but if a combination of the IP is interesting to you and the fact that it is just much more focused on, you know, character leveling and some of those things, there are no, you know, you don't have to worry a lot about, you know, going back to the shop or sending a carrier creature back with, you know, to do shopping for you or anything like that. It's just very focused on the character, upgrading the character and upgrading the towers, and then just understanding the basic concepts of MOBA. And I think it's worth trying out. So I will be going back to Guardians of Middle-earth and hopefully, you know, maybe playing against some humans, and hopefully my self-esteem will remain intact.
Awesome.
So that's
cool. We'll have to play, Jeremy.
I would love to play.
We've been trying to get a game together for some time.
It's true, and this could be the one. Maybe we'll just both be humiliated, though. And I, you know what? As long as I'm not humiliated alone, that's all I ask.
The innuendo continues. Sage,
that's right?
Yeah.
She left us. Oh, thought you disappeared.
Didn't sleep here. No.
What's going on in your life? What are you playing?
I played a lot of things.
I sent some things over today.
You did.
Yes. Did you get a chance to play some Cloud Phobia?
I did. I played pretty much everything you sent me, actually.
Awesome. Awesome. Right? That's cool. Let's hear about it.
I did play Cloud Phobia. It's a 2D side-scrolling shoot everybody.
Everybody.
Shoot everybody. And it's great. It opened... I'm so inarticulate. I apologize. Let's start over. It's really great. When it first started, I thought that it might be a little too graphically inclined because they have a lot of like moving backgrounds where even though you're scrolling two-dimensionally, they've got these backgrounds that shift so that it feels like you're moving at a more three-dimensional angle. Mm-hmm. And that's not always super successful because sometimes you get a little vertigo or you feel like you can't really pay attention to the stuff you're trying to shoot. But this game does it really actually pretty seamlessly, and the pacing is really, really good. The game makes it really easy to, you know, be able to maneuver you've got a little mecha, so it's in the vein of like Razafon or Gundam or any of those kinds of mech oriented animes, and you can shoot and you can blast your booster jets. Mm-hmm. Which you have to do because you're on a timer to get to the boss, like many of those games. And so the transitioning between toggling your blasters on and off and shooting all the different things that are coming your way, and even the warning system they employ mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. show you when trajectories are coming and everything. Projectiles? I don't know where I am with my words today. are all really, really solid. It all mm-hmm. flows really, really smoothly. I forget the name of the original. Do you remember who originally put it out?
No, I know. I originally played it. I was looking it up. I think almost 10 years ago, there was a one level demo that was circulating for a while. And I don't know, maybe Adam mentioned it. Somebody mentioned it to me and decided to play it. Really liked it. Waited for the full game. And I don't know. It never really came to fruition for a very long time.
It came out in 2010 by the original company that starts with an M that I can't remember. And then Rockin' Android put it out last year.
Okay, but yeah, really awesome and well worth, if you're a fan of the indie bundles, picking up.
Yeah, it's totally, totally worth it. I mean, the whole bundle is really great, that indie bundle, but even just Cloud Phobia on its own would make it worth getting. I played Master of Alchemy, which is also in that indie bundle. It's by Darkwave. The music sounds a little bit like Lone Survivor, enough so that I even looked up Jasper Byrne to see if he had helped with it, but mm-hmm. It doesn't look like he did. It's really simple. It's kind of like a Widget Workshop sort of game, only with alchemy instead of... But very entertaining. Wimp is in there. It's kind of like... it's kind of like World of Goo.
Mm-hmm.
You have a...
Which you're a big fan of.
I am a big fan of World of Goo. This was a little more like a Braid World of Goo offspring.
Pretentious?
No, wait, what?
Pretentious.
No. What?
You say Braid. I think pretentious. I'm sorry.
You think that game is pretentious?
I thought Braid was, yeah.
Why?
I think it's a great game. I think it's a good game, but hearing Jonathan Below talk about it...
Now, wait, so the game is pretentious, or you just don't like what Jonathan...
Well, what Jonathan Blow, what he said about the game, and the things that went into some of the ideas and concepts into it.
Okay, so you don't think the game is pretentious. I really like Braid. I'll just be on record.
Okay.
I really like Braid.
Okay.
Robert, I think that maybe your dislike of someone whose last name is Blow...
no.
...way of your appreciation of the game, because like it is a better looking game than most games of that type, but I don't think that's something to be down on them about, that like they have a good looking game.
Okay.
Well, anyway, I really
I'm just
like
hung up on Blow.
Clearly. Maybe you should do a little bit less hung up on Blow. no,
is that the noun or the verb?
both.
Okay. Will do.
One of them is fine, the other one you shouldn't do drugs. So don't do
okay.
Drugs. no, anyway, well, it's sort of like the non-pretentious offspring of World of Goo and Braid. There's no time manipulating dynamics, but there's, you know, little items that you can collect, but you don't have to collect. You're this little blob of something disgusting. It's kind of a gross game. It's clearly made for kids. Although an adult could play it, but you're this little blobby thing that goes down the toilet after something that has... Don't.
Just like what Blue's suffering from right now. Sorry.
That's what Wimp is. No, it's someone stole your underpants, and so it kind of reminds me of Captain Underpants. Actually, it's that kind of humor.
You play stool.
You're not stool though. Some little bug creature takes your underwear that you hung up with your mom that day. You're dreaming about it as you're in bed, and then you wake up.
Wait. You messed your underwear? Was it racing stripes? What's going on?
No. You did your laundry. You hung it up.
Okay.
You're this tiny green marshmallow looking thing.
Okay.
That's not poop. I don't know what that is, but you're a little green blob. And you're this fly steals the underwear and goes down the toilet with it. So you chase after it because you're like, no, I just helped my mom put that up. And then you go down.
I'm still puzzled why what a fly wants to do with clean underwear. But.
I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense that way. You are like not quite gross, but you're this weird green blobby thing that can stick stuff. Mm-hmm. And he looks really unhappy about sticking to stuff. Like when you hit the stick to stuff button, he makes this like kind of I feel gross face. I don't know. It seems like children's humor. Although he's very cute, and unlike World of Goo, you get a lot more invested in this one particular character because there's not just a million balls that are all the same. It's this one little guy who mm-hmm. makes really cute, adorable noises. Actually, Blue would probably really like this game. Because he seems to like characters that you like that are really cute and that you mm-hmm. can kind of get involved with.
Sure.
So, kind of for kids. Jeremy, maybe you actually could play it with your kids.
It's... From what I've seen of it, it's a little bit like a kind of a blobby sort of Super Meat Boy kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right? And it's got kind of a sticky sort of slidey dynamic.
Yep, sticky slidey sounds about right.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it definitely looks cute. He basically looks like a little green meat boy.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's on Xbox or PC if you get the indie bundle. And that's, I think, everything I checked out on the indie bundle. There's a couple other things, and there's this Cognition 1, if you haven't picked that up already. And there's a demo... No, there's a beta of McTroid.
McTroid, yes.
McTroid, yeah. Which I didn't get a chance to play yet. So that's the indie bundle. Everybody should check it out.
Now, which indie bundle is this? I think you need to clarify that.
This is the indie debut.
So it's the indieroyale.com?
With cheese, yes.
With cheese. So indieroyale.com, you can see all the little previews and things like that, and it's very, very similar to the Humble Bundle style. So pay what you want, pay above.
I do believe it's a minimum. It was hovering around $5, and you know, if you can't pay that, I mean, that's about like $1 per game.
You can't pay that, you're not a real gamer.
No, if you're going in saying... it's about what it's worth and it's free, then
worth it even just for cloud phobia. But the difference is, and this might be a selling point for some people, is that it's all available on Desura. So you can either download the game straight to your computer, or you can play it all through the Desura game client, which I actually really like. It's really solid. I never have any glitchy problems. And because it's not as sort of overburdened as Steam seems to be these days, it never really has any crash buggy problems. Speaking of buggy problems, I played... Oh. Okay, this is some bullshit right up in here, okay?
Oh, no!
I have Knights of the Old Republic. It's one of my favorite games, and it used to work just fine on my Xbox 360 as a backwards-compatible game, and suddenly, it's not anymore. They, like, released an update that made that game unplayable, so I now have a useless disc because my old Xbox has a red ring of death. So I went and I downloaded it on Skype because I was like, I really want to play Knights of the Old Republic. I gotta get my Jedi on,
Skype,
and it's one of the best Jedi.
Now?
Huh?
Skype
downloaded on Skype.
I didn't know they had a marketplace. Hold on, let me score something here.
Oh, not Skype, on Steam. Sorry,
that's okay.
Misspeak on my part. Downloaded it, and apparently, players be warned, you can download the game from other websites. I've heard you used to be able to. You might not be able to anymore. It might only be on Steam now. But if you download it through Steam, apparently a problem that a lot of people have is a movement bug, where if you, especially with your main party leader person, if your main character is party leader and gets hit during a battle, suddenly you can't move. You can still follow other people if you make other characters the party leader, but you can no longer walk forward, not through mouse clicking, not through, you know, WASD keys, which is really frustrating because, like, you can save your point and reload it, and it will be fine, but having to do that every time you get hit in a battle is, like, every 5 or 10 minutes. And it really, you know, breaks up the flow of the game. So there is a fix for it. What? Robert, do you have a question?
Yes.
What's your question?
On Skype you put, ooh, gross, it throbs, haha.
Oh, I sent you a heart.
Oh, okay.
But I'm so glad that was something you needed to know. I said, anyway, Knights of the Old Republic, I don't need to talk about it because everybody knows that game, but I just wanted to let everyone know.
It's still
know
on my list of games to play. I've never actually played Knights of the Old Republic.
Are you kidding me? Really?
I'm kidding. I know.
Actually, get off the podcast and go play, and then come back.
I've got a Steam copy. I've got it.
Jeremy, you got suspended.
I guess I got suspended. That's it.
Jeremy, you need to know this. If you encounter this bug, there are a couple different fixes. One of them is fixing one of the INI files, and then there's a whole forum post on it that there's a couple different fixes you can try, which seems to work for most people. There's also a Sith Lord patch that you can download that has nothing to do with the Sith. They just called it that fixes some in-game stuff that somehow got screwed up on Steam, but nowhere else.
You know, you should just play The Old Republic.
But why?
I don't know, because instead of fiddling around with buggy old games, you should play the new hotness. It's free to play.
Because the new hotness doesn't even compare to how good the buggy old is, even when it's buggy and old. That's what I gotta say to you.
Oh, man.
You're really a fan of KOTOR, huh?
Oh, my God, are you not? What the hell, Robert? Why are you hating on all the games I love tonight?
No, I'm not hating. I am surprised.
Hater!
No.
Do you know what? Do you not like Knights of the Old Republic?
I do.
Yeah, Robert.
I like it.
So why?
It's not pretentious. No, I was. I'm just taken back by your love and appreciation for it.
Oh, I see. Because I like Braid, and you think that's pretentious. How could I possibly like a good?
I'm never going to live that down, am I?
Yeah.
No, probably not. Dick. Well, I'm glad that you're pleased by my loyalty to Knights of the Old Republic. It's a great.
I have heard it said that it is the best post movie fiction that they've actually ever done.
For Star Wars?
For Star Wars.
Yeah. Easily.
What was like the second one that came out on one of the like Apple computers back when it was still Apple?
I remember the 2600 version of Empire Strikes Back where you fought endless waves of AT-ATs and you would always lose because there would be one that you just couldn't hit fast enough. And it was this scrolling kind of game like Defender where you were in a, what were those called? The Snow Speeder, what were those called?
Snow Speeders.
And you tried
it. No, it wasn't that one. It was like Dark Knights or Dark Empire, and you were like walking through hallways shooting storms.
Oh, wait, you're talking about the first-person shooter, Dark Forces?
Yeah. Oh, no, that was good.
The old one, not the one that okay. was like back, I mean, it came
the
out
when
I was...
The old spritey one, where everybody's always facing forward, no matter which direction you rotate around them.
Probably.
And it was like, it was one of the first games where you could look up, because you could like toggle up a little higher, up a little higher, up a little higher. It didn't actually have full 3D.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's the one. Yep, good old Dash. No, not Dash Rendar. Dash Rendar was, he was from Shadows of the Empire.
Yes.
Who's the protagonist in Dark Forces? Quick, Kyle Katarn.
Jesus.
Yeah, yep.
Come on, you guys should know this stuff.
Right.
Okay, Jeremy, which one is Jaden in? Smart guy.
Jaden? Hold on here. Are you talking about the villain from the second game? The one who was blind? He, like, blinded himself so that he could be more at one with the Force?
I don't think he was a villain. No, I think you were the main character, and your name was Jaden.
Jaden?
Maybe an anti-hero?
I don't know. Maybe. I guess you got me on that one.
If anyone knows, post it in the notes to the show.
Jaden.
Yeah, so anyway, that...
He was Chewbacca's illegitimate son.
Oh, no, he wasn't. That's just...
With Leia.
Gross. I'm moving on past that. Leia.
You think they could breed those two?
That's what you want to think about? Is Leia fucking a Wookiee? Really?
Yep. Yeah.
Their
spawn would probably look like an Ewok, to be honest.
Their spawn probably is the whole village of Ewoks. That's probably how it happened. Oh, blasphemy. Anyway, I also. Two Android free games, which I always like to plug because it's so rare for me to find ones that I like. Well, there are two. There's Free Flow and there's Cross Me. Cross Me is a good idea, kind of boring. It's like a crossword puzzle, like chip out the blocks with numbers. It's not worth it.
Like Mario Picross?
I don't know. I didn't play that one.
Oh, you didn't play that one? That was good. Yeah.
Wait, you didn't play Picross?
No.
You need to get off this podcast right now.
I knew that was coming down the pipeline.
Go play some goddamn Picross.
Yeah, that's good.
What 3D
is a little bit much for the 3DS, but the old 2D one for the Game Boy? Oh, yeah.
You know what I got from Club Nintendo? They had it as one of their... You could spend your coins and get Mario's Picross for your 3DS?
Yes.
Oh, that was great.
That was
coins well spent.
Oh, well, that's a problem.
It's a classic.
I don't own a 3DS, so I can't play it.
There actually is an Android version of a game like that, that it actually uses the same formula, where it just tells you the numbers above and below, but it also uses color. So you can actually make color Picross pictures.
Is it Cross Me? Because that's the one I was playing.
You know, I don't know. It's on my wife's phone. I don't have it, but I will make sure to update you on the podcast with the name of this Android puzzle game. Actually, I'm trying to remember there's a name for those kinds of puzzles. I don't think Picross invented those sorts of things.
No, there is a name. I'm just being lazy.
It's a Japanese type of
puzzle. Right. Anyway, those are way fun. They're way fun. But yeah, you should pretty much play Picross.
And then Free Flow is noted, and I will try and play it. Free Flow is more fun. It's one of those connect the dots via pipes that can't cross over each other kind of games, and it's very good for like... you know, simple game kind of thing, and it's free, so.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Connect the pipes, but don't touch the dots. What was that?
No. Connect the
dots. Okay. connect your pipe and avoid the period. Gotcha.
That's so gross, Robert. Oh my god. That is the grossest thing ever said on the show ever.
Wow. I mean,
some people don't avoid it, you know? Some people embrace it.
Oh god. And that's a nice
I need blue to giggle along with me right now. Just take it down.
Oh my god.
Look, this is serious business.
This is. Okay.
I can't even talk.
Sorry. Okay. You guys were talking about Star Wars a minute ago.
Star Wars.
Yeah, so Star Wars, I've always been a fan of pinball back when it was a physical thing and not something simulated on a television screen, which probably dates me back to the early Jurassic period. Anyway, pinball machines, at least in my environment out here in California, are pretty much a rarity. The only ones I've seen, Las Vegas Pinball Hall of Fame, but Zen Studios, they made the lack of having real machines kind of bearable with these collections of virtual machines that really play like the real thing. They've nailed it. And they started off with just kind of generic designs that emulated the table designs of the 80s and 90s. Now, the studio, they've been making tables based on Street Fighter, Ninja Gaiden, so on video games. Then they got the Marvel tables, and now bringing us up to date is the Star Wars collection. It's called the Star Wars Pinball Collection, and it brings three instead of the usual quartet tables to gamers for a modest $10 price. It is based around the concept of Back to the Future, Boba Fett, and Clone Wars. And each of them, they show off this quality that gamers have come to expect from the company, and by that I mean the leaderboards actually work and they goad you to do a little bit better. They constantly compare your score to others, unlike say the Pinball Arcade, which is, you know, a competent pinball simulation but doesn't quite have the leaderboard quality and all the little bells and whistles you probably come to expect from Zen. All three tables are pretty well designed. Boba Fett has a jetpack flying, is simulated there, so you know the table gives a real sense of speed. He gets his missions from either Vader or what's his name? Jabba the Hutt. They're a nice close-up of Jabba, and they model him pretty well.
Which version of Jabba is it?
The fat one.
Okay.
I don't know.
Is it like the special edition New Hope Jabba?
Mm.
The one that was like really terrible where, you know, he was in the
CG that Lucas redid?
Yeah.
I think it's old one. I think it's Han shot first era.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
Could be wrong.
Just making sure.
Anyway, Empire Strikes Back has this classic feel that matches the 80s era that Empire was released in. I think it was, 81, Jeremy?
With leg warmers and all that.
Yeah, and off the shoulder. What was that? Let's get physical. Olivia Newton-John carrying a shirt.
Shake out the shoulders sort of thing.
Yeah, headband, sweat.
Flash dance, pull that bucket and the water just whoosh.
Yes.
I'm starting to, you know what, I'm going to actually buy this pinball set now that we're talking about this.
Flash dance,
you're waiting
for it. You know what, we need to do it. Hey, they released, didn't they release a casual version? Yeah, they released a casual version of Nobody Puts Baby in the Corner. What was that one?
Dirty Dancing.
So why not Flash Dance?
Wow, Flash Dance, Dirty Dancing, and what was the other one? Footloose.
Yes.
That would be the trifecta of tables.
Zen, you hear it here. That's what we need. Make it happen. Make it so.
Maybe they could make a Ferris Bueller or 16 Candles one as well.
Oh my god, this is a gold mine. You know what? We need to delete this podcast. This is our break, Robert.
Oh my god.
Ducky could be in there. Anyway, so I'm getting way off track.
Adventures in Babysitting. You could have like Thor, the Mighty God of Thunder.
Did you ever see Top Secret? Really like that.
Yes. Yeah, you know, I was kind of hit or miss on Top Secret.
We're getting way off track.
Yeah,
where was I?
Star Wars.
Jesus. Empire Strikes Back. Originally, the playfield, it feels a little bit sparse, but then you start opening it up. There's certain events, like there's this AT-AT, which needs to be taken down, and it's nice to see those things modeled, much like Jabba the Hutt.
Oh my god, is there a Battle of Hoth in this? I thought we were over that.
Why would you be over that?
Isn't that the joke in Star Wars games? There's a Battle of Hoth in every single game.
Yeah, pretty much. That was such a key scene, though, Jeremy. How could you leave that out? I mean, if you leave that out...
Everything.
Okay. So, anyway, my surprise pick of the bunch, Clone Wars. I never watched the television show, didn't see the film.
It's pretty good.
Okay. I really like the table. It's filled with all these winding ramps and fairly easy targets. And this one's a fast but fairly easy game of Pin. And usually fast and easy don't go along together, but in this one it does fairly well. The only caveat is the price, and I don't want to harp. I don't want to downplay Zen because I've really had a lot of fun. But usually you get four, so this one you get three, bringing the individual price of a table down to $3.33. Still not bad. Obviously, the license wasn't cheap. So, you know, instead of the four, you're getting three score-chasing pinball games, which is enough for me. And if you're into, you know, flipping that steel ball around, more than likely, even if you don't care about Star Wars, good fun here. So
kind of weird that they, I mean, if they did three of them, why not do, like, A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi?
Yeah, and then I heard they're bringing out 10, which brings up back to the numbers game that we talked about during the cave. So you're going to have 3, 3, 3, and 4?
Yeah.
That's not going to work.
I don't know. Maybe they're going to have tables that are specifically like there's one that's going to be Han Solo and one that's going to be Lando, one that's going to be J.J. Abrams. They'll cross it over into Star Trek.
Will it have lens flares coming out at you?
Old Spock. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Spock. Okay. Yes. Sage, I just heard lens flares in the tiniest voice ever.
That would maybe lens be flares. The lamest feature ever is lens flares.
I love lens flares.
Can I just tell you something? Like
per hour, I think you had more lens flares than any other game, and I may play that after the show. Yes.
I need to admit something. Like I never really noticed a lot of lens flares in J.J. Abrams movies. Maybe I'm still under his spell, but.
Okay.
Everybody makes these jokes about lens flares, and it's fun to get on board and make jokes about lens flares, but does he really have a lot of lens flares?
No, he has like one.
Maybe he had one really good one.
Right. I mean, probably Ridley Scott and Blade Runner, there was probably a hell of a lot more.
Now that I can come up with. Yes.
But Blade Runner's so awesome, I don't have a single bad word to say about that film.
Like, they'd close up on Harrison Ford and be like, lens flare.
I think they had a lens flare on the lens flare.
Yeah. Oh man!
Which is, you know, the funny thing about lens flare for 1985. Well, yes.
Here's the funny thing about lens flare. Lens flare is a phenomenon that only happens because of the lenses on cameras. You do not see a lens flare in actual natural space. So it's weird that people would add
glasses. Does that happen? I don't wear glasses. Do you?
If you're a nerd.
Oh well, we all are. We're talking about video games in a podcast, Jeremy.
Nerds.
Yes.
Do you not?
I got a little lens flare in my eye right then.
He just reference to Revenge of the Nerds. So you quit trying to pull me back into the 80s movies.
Oh, 80. You know what? Will the 80s ever come back to movies?
Well, we just saw Red Dawn, and what was the other awful remake?
Dread?
Yes. No, Dread was good.
Oh, Dread was good.
I think that was 90s. Dread was really good. What was the other one? The Colin Farrell movie?
Shoot 'em
up.
You always want to shoot 'em up.
Wasn't he in Dread? Wasn't Colin Farrell in Dread? Didn't he?
No, he was not. That's why Dread was. No, he was not. Not in Dread.
No, he was not. Okay.
Was not.
All right.
Pretentious. Anyway, let me talk about F1 2012. So, guys, when you boot up the game F1 2012, you will spend a few minutes, you'll be sent to this nice recreation of the Yas Marine Island, which is just outside Abu Dhabi City. And there you'll go to this kind of Skip Barber school of F1 simulation, which if you have $4,000, just kicking around somewhere, you can go to this 5-day class at Laguna Seca, and that's on my bucket list. Anyway, you'll learn just every nuance you can about driving F1, acceleration, cornering, racing lines, drafting, curves, drag reduction, you name it. And that will take you about an hour, which I know is going to throw a lot of people off. So a tutorial about an hour. But once you get past that threshold, if you can get past that threshold, there's a lot of fun to be had. For me, learning those things was kind of intoxicating because I'm a sim nut. You guys know that. I enjoy simulations. The deeper the sim, yep, almost the more challenging it is, the more it tells me, you know, just fuck off, the more I love it.
All right, I'm going to put you to the irons here because I want to see for the next podcast. I want to hear your impressions of Farm Simulator 2013. Or like Bus Simulator. Yeah, oh, yeah.
No, I love the Harvest Moon games. Not really.
No, Robert. I'm talking the bus simulator where you have to press the button to open the door and let the people into the bus. You have to make your stops because this is such a hardcore sim.
You know, I've played the train ones, and can I admit I had a lot of fun with them. Just getting to work on time. And
actually,
exactly at the station, I realized like I'm totally wasting my time and I could be making like $50 an hour driving a rail train doing this. But there's something about it, just learning the nuance and saying, you know, if the train conductor ever has a heart attack, hey, I'm your man. I can take over.
Or like woodcutting simulator. I you know what? I can sort of see where you're coming from with that because I very nearly went to a very dark place, like really getting into simulators.
Okay.
Like they released woodcutting simulator where you were actually like deforesting things. You were like actually cutting, you know, giant logs with this big, like weird looking saw machine.
Okay.
And, and you could even have like a hip mounted one, like a giant, like actual chainsaw that was mounted to your body, and you'd have
You're
to make like diagonal cuts.
Right now,
I don't know. It's kind of, you know, I mean, there may not be a bayonet on the end of that thing, but you know. So I want to at least one hardcore simulator. You need to play it and tell us.
Send me the link. I want to cut some.
I tell you what,
belt. I will
in,
do
in the show notes. Here's what we'll do. Everybody pick the craziest hardcore simulator. I mean, there's one about doing surgery that I saw. That's you actually would have like the rib cage, and you'd have like I saw some guy and he was just messing with it, so he like totally just cracked open the guy's ribs and just kind of made a mess of it. But there are a ton of weird simulators. Yeah, there are a lot of weird simulators out there.
Yeah,
so everybody.
My team wasn't authentic enough for me, so yeah, I'd love to.
Yeah, no, this is definitely not like shards of glass embedded in this guy's kidney for some reason.
It was his arm. Anyway,
although I don't like it when they're harder than doing it in real life would be. Because
no, yeah, but that would
what?
Be.
A-
I almost wonder though if you could train someone for a job doing some of that stuff. Like some of that stuff is pretty crazy. Like
yeah,
I don't know.
Not
like
when
that,
it's
that,
not
that,
like it's even harder than it's not similar enough to
right.
really be good.
It's,
training,
not, it's just... not really a simulation in it, at that point anymore. So
right.
Anyway.
So tutorial about an hour. So once you complete that, the game really opens up. You're allowed to participate in, trying to remember, season mode. That's the short career. You have 10 weekend races, each 5 laps, so fairly short, breezy. Champions mode, you get 6 scenarios where you outdrive real-world drivers. There's a casual mode. It's all called arcade. And all of these things prepare you for the really involved the career mode. And there you take a custom character, which is a change from F1 2011. They had a Grand Prix mode where you guide this real-world personality. That's missing. Not sure how many people are going to miss that, but I did. So there in the career mode, you make decisions to be, you know, courted by different teams. You spend virtual weekends in practice sessions, up to 3 optional stages of qualification, and then finally the race. Now, F1 2012, it's not a game for everyone. Even if you enjoy watching F1, kind of what we just talked about, there's a lot to concern yourself with. So I really recommend this only to diehard sim fans like myself and people who really want to immerse themselves in learning kind of the nuance and appreciating all the things that F1 drivers, you know, have to learn and master to the degree. So if you ever had a dream of going to Skip Barber School, don't have the $4,000, this is $20, or was $20, Best Buy deals of the day. And Codemasters,
Robert,
which I love. Yes.
Sorry,
we
did
interrupted
you say
my code, my plug for Codemasters, because I love those
guys. Oh, sorry, plug Codemasters.
I'm kidding, yes.
I was going to ask, did you say what controller you were using?
I was just using, and this is my shame, and you know.
Like a true hardcore sim fan.
Yes, I was just using my standard 360 controller.
So not
I know.
The hardest of the hardcore.
No, you will remember this. We met Codemasters at E3, and I was gushing there. And then they put me in a setup, which is a real-world setup. They had this chair. It was probably a $3,000 chair, and it had it had the stick. It had shifters.
Right.
And I did terrible. I came in next to last place. And
you did better than me, though, if you recall. I did really. They were laughing at me because I did.
Yeah, but, you know, it was still embarrassing. It was still. That was
right.
Kind of a low point for me for E3. Like, I wouldn't mind, you know, getting in top 10 or something, but, you know, I didn't do so.
So, wait, are you using a 360 controller because you think all the peripherals make it harder?
For me, yeah. for me. I just, it does. It takes it up a notch. Like, you have to kind of master those things.
No, totally. That's
I'm just so used to, I've been playing racing games for so many years that controlling or steering a car with a standard controller just feels supernatural to me. Blame Ridge Racer. So, yeah. I'm not as hardcore that way.
So is there any reason why... I mean, this seems specific. I mean, super specific. F1, right?
Yes.
So is there any reason that somebody should get this over, like, Forza or Gran Turismo? Or
for 97% of people, probably take those because it's a lot easier just to go in and have fun. The 3% are the masochists like me that enjoy kind of learning, and you, Jeremy, too, that learn those nuances that say, hey, you know, here's a challenge, here's a hurdle, I want you to, you know, jump over.
Yeah, can you do it?
Yeah, kind of thing. And for me, the gratification stems from, hey, I went from nothing. I went from this particular point to, hey, I'm not so bad now. I can, you know, kind of hold myself and turn off some of the assists and, you know, that level.
Right, sure.
Anyway, I've been playing a lot of, as you say, Naruto.
Cool. Robert, what else? Anything else?
That's about it. I don't want to take too long because we are going to talk to, right now, Ryan Steven, NIS America.
Hey, dude.
Robert here. Today I'm being joined by our friends at NIS America, Ryan and Steven. Welcome back, dudes.
Hey, Robert. Thank you.
Thanks for coming back on the show. Now, one of the things I want to do is start with what's new this week. Atelier Aisha, Alchemist of the Ground of Dusk, was published by Tecmo Koei. And that's, I believe, the 18th game in Gus' 15-year-old franchise. Now, in the past... NISA had published the last probably seven or so entries in the United States, but this time out, you're handling localization duties, but not actually putting the product out. And a few of our readers and listeners wanted to know if you could explain the change in efforts, how that got passed to Tecmo.
Yeah, I mean, well, basically, you know, they got purchased by Tecmo Koei last year.
Yes.
So, pretty much, like right around that time, was we didn't really know what our hand was going to be in the series, but we at least knew that we would be doing the localization. And then, basically, I mean, it was pretty late in the cycle when we were finally actually able to announce who was publishing. Mm-hmm. But it just, in the end, made more sense for them to be the publisher.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Yeah, since you guys were behind the localization, maybe you can comment on this, Stephen. Can you tell us a little bit about Aisha's storyline?
For Aisha, it starts off with her. She's like been living by herself for a few years now. Mm-hmm. She used to live at like her workshop with her grandfather and her sister. Mm-hmm. But then her grandfather died, and shortly after that, her sister just vanished. And so since then, she's been working on her own, living by herself, but getting some help from some friends that knew her before that or knew her grandfather. As she's gathering ingredients and visiting the grave of her sister that they've set up, she sees a vision of her appear. Mm-hmm. And this alchemist who comes from a different land, who's been traveling throughout her area, ends up like kind of stumbling in on it. And he tells her that she's still alive somewhere, and that if she studies alchemy, she can find a way to save her.
Mm-hmm. Now, this doesn't take place in Ireland anymore, correct?
Correct. This one takes place like in a brand new world, so none of the nothing from the previous storylines kind of gets into here. It's all totally new.
Okay. Now, one thing, I just received the code to download. It was a 15-gigabyte monstrosity yesterday, and I hadn't have a chance to dive in yet. But once I do start playing, what are some of the mechanical changes that will set this title apart?
A lot of it is fairly similar. So if you've played the previous three, a lot of the battle system is pretty similar. They've added new stuff to it, though.
Okay.
Like now there's different zones that you can be in, so you can like attack from behind instead of before it was just your three people are up front and then the monsters across for them. So now you can like move around the battlefield a little bit. And that kind of, they're mostly the battle depends on like we are facing of them. Also, the range from how far you are from them.
Okay.
And every character specializes, like, some of them are better when they're further away. Some of them specialize when they're right up close. So that kind of gives an added layer to the previous battle system. And there's also, now with the synthesis system, Aisha learns these synthesis skills that allows her to fine-tune her synthesis even more, so there's a little bit more ability to customize your items.
Okay. Now, one thing that always kind of messed with me, although it was lessened as the series continued and went on, is the time constraint put on the main heroine. Has that been tweaked at all?
Yeah, now there really isn't any time constraint. You just have your goal, and you have to finish that by the end of 3 years. And that's pretty much the only time constraint you have. So there's no more like, oh, every 2 months, 3 months, you have to finish something. It's now you can take your time and not really have to worry about it.
Now, let's move on to the recent press event where you guys announced three upcoming titles. Of course, the one I can't wait for, Disgaea Dimension 2, Brighter Darkness. Now, of course, this is what fanboys have always wanted, a sequel to the events of the first game, returning characters, and a few twists like Lala Laharl. Can you guys tease any more info? I guess it's Laharl Chan.
Yeah, there's a few interesting things in Disgaea D2. Pretty much, Laharl has become the overlord at the end of the first one.
Yes.
And now it's a few years later, and he's still trying to get people to recognize the fact that he's the overlord. And so he starts off with this kind of like PR campaign where he like sets up all these statues all over the place. But then some weird stuff's going on in the Netherworld, so some of the demons aren't really respecting him because he's not doing anything about it. And so part of that is like these flowers from Celestia start popping up, and they start to have an effect on demons in different ways. And so a lot of weird stuff starts happening all over, and that's kind of how you get Laharl Chan.
Interesting. So basically the Netherworld turns into Haight-Ashbury District. So what's going on? Peace and love and everything. Now, one thing I heard about a little bit was the Demon Dojo, which allowed players to improve their character stats. Is this like an item world just for characters?
I haven't really been able to do too much with it, but it kind of seems more like the cabinet from Disgaea 4. Because you can kind of set people up to be to train in certain areas, I guess. I haven't really seen the effects of it that much, but I haven't really delved too much into the game yet. So
okay, Very cool. Now, also announced was an Image Epoch title, and no, not Black Rock Shooter the game. I promised myself I wouldn't ask you guys about that once again. Three times.
It's still planned. It's still coming.
Thank you, Ryan. My dreams persist. No, but I'm talking about Time and Eternity. I know Namco Bandai is putting the title out in Europe. Will you guys be handling the localization for that?
Yeah. Okay. We're working with them. So I mean, mm-hmm. we'll be publishing for North America and Europe for that. So okay. Yeah, I mean, it's awesome kind of chance for us, and it's like a different kind of take on the mm-hmm. RPG.
Yes.
Because it's not necessarily the sprites or kind of HD graphics. It's actually hand drawn mm-hmm. animation. So the kind of merging both worlds of both video games and anime together. So it's looking pretty awesome.
Cool. Now, beyond a rifle carrying protagonist in a impossibly short skirt, which kind of hit two of my primary prerequisites for games, what else can I look forward to?
The battle system is kind of interesting because it's not the proverbial standard turn-based style. You actually have the ability to dodge attacks, so mm-hmm. it's kind of a little bit more on your toes in that aspect.
Okay.
And that's one thing to look forward to. And also, I mean, just
so a little bit more real time.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, there's like a timer or something to that effect where you have to time your attacks, but sure. the ability to dodge is definitely in there. So I mean, mm-hmm. that's kind of it's a little bit different than a standard turn-based game. So
okay, very cool. Now, also announced was Guided Fate Paradox, which is being described as a roguelike by some outlets. I was wondering if this is accurate, or more importantly, will this scratch my itch for a console ZHP and Losing Ranger type of game?
Yeah, you got it. It's roguelike. ZHP was more rogue-ish than roguelike.
Yes.
It has the, not like a softer side, but it has kind of, even if you die in the middle of the dungeon and you're on like the 58th floor, you're still going to gain all those levels as kind of base stats. So the rewards there still there, even if you lose some of your stuff. Plus there was the insurance in ZHP where you could get some of the stuff back. So, I mean, a lot of those things are kind of employed in the game. For God of Fate Paradox. So, I mean, Zeta Hero Project was definitely one of my favorite games that we've done. It's just, it was a good pick-up-and-play game, and this one kind of does a little bit more to the series because it actually gives you one of the characters is an angel that's allowed to follow you around, and you can actually command her to do different things in the levels while you're doing the dungeon diving. So,
So kind of like the Prinny Wife?
Kind of, sort of. Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the big thing, to constantly bring money back, and then you would eventually get some food. So, going with the food thing, again, it's, you move one space, and that burns energy, so you're you've HP and your energy, so you're kind of walking the line between both as you're rolling around on Prinny tank treads or like a Prinny car. So, I mean, yeah, the over-the-top items are definitely in there again, and then this guy-ish style special attacks and such. And one of the real cool things is like when you're actually holding the DualShock, you can actually the special attacks are kind of coincide to where you're moving the R3 stick.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of on the fly there. So it's rather than having to use a old school menu, that's kind of there. So I mean. That was one of the things. It took a little bit getting used to for me, but I mean, I felt like it was kind of a new thing. And plus, I mean, it's not. I mean, it kind of definitely has a disguise-ish feel with the level design, but at the same time, it's a lot kind of faster. There's not the setup. It's just just moving around and then constantly going through floors. So it's definitely one of my favorite games.
So no button presses. You're just using the sticks to kind of navigate through menus.
Well, no, there's button presses, but I mean, like the stick, kind of like depending on where you move the stick in the direction, there's like a special move map to that area, and then you would hit the corresponding X or circle button to initiate it. So, I mean, it's kind of it's like an add-on for the ZHP system. But again, it's the spiritual successor to ZHP. So those that like that game basically, can look forward to this one.
The trailer mentions some of the work was done by the planning and development team of Hour of Darkness. And I wondered just how many of N1's team contributed some work for Guided Fate Paradox.
You know what? To be brutally honest, I'd have to check with the president, Nicolas-san, to see on that. But more than from what it looks like, it's a lot of the level design and such, and just the actual. I mean, you know, I'll definitely find out, and then if you're okay, we'll you can add it in there if that's.
We'll just have you saying 18.
Oh, yeah,
the definitive answer.
With a different voice.
Yes. We'll put a voice synthesizer in there. 18. Dubbed. Now, before I let you guys go, what's new on the anime front?
Oh, yeah, we've got tons of stuff coming up. We actually are going to be doing our first movie. It's called The Princess and the Pilot. So that one's pretty awesome. We're pretty stoked for that. It's going to be out on Blu-ray. And then we have Hanasaku Iroha, both season 1 and 2 planned for within the next foreseeable couple months. And then what else do we have? We just had announced yesterday.
The Cat God.
Yeah, the Everyday Tales of a Cat God. So that's pretty funny. I mean, that's actually, it's kind of a completely different humor-wise style anime because it's very self-aware of the jokes that they're making. So Nick Doer is the editor for that, so he had a blast working on that one. It's because it's been pretty self-aware and a lot of funny jokes are in it. So
cool.
Yeah, that one just got announced yesterday.
I think you guys got Natsume's Book of Friends season 3
also. Yeah, that came out on Tuesday also. So that's a Blu-ray DVD combo pack. So yeah, I haven't got a chance to check it out yet, but I love making the comics after, you know, the yokai constantly haranguing Natsume or hanging out his window staring in, or all these other jokes that I make, but
creepy,
you know,
creepy kind of stuff. Yeah,
I mean, but it, you know, it does get borderline with that, but I mean, some of the yokai are really kind of, you know, harmless, right. So but yeah, I have a lot of fun with that series.
Cool. Well, thanks for so much for coming on the show. Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Robert. And then it sounds like we didn't have any Resident Evil door. If there
what's
was.
What's going on with that?
I don't know.
I want my money back.
No one's going.
People tune in for RE door. Would you guys put some oil on that WD-40?
I don't think so. It's just I don't think everyone's. No one's gone to the bathroom yet. So, yeah.
Okay. For next interview, a lot more coffee. Okay, we're back. Time for trivia. You guys interested in doing some trivia?
No, yeah.
No, yeah?
Okay, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So this week, Dimitri, Felicia, and Victor make their console return after being absent from the better part of two generations with Darkstalkers Resurrection. It's an HD port that combines elements from both Night Warriors, Darkstalkers Revenge, and Darkstalkers 3. Name the last U.S. showing for these quarter-circling curiosities. Is it A, Darkstalkers Chronicle, The Chaos Tower? B, Darkstalkers 3 for PSN via a PS1 Classic? C, Night Warriors Darkstalkers Revenge for the PS2? Or D, Darkstalkers The Night Warriors for PSN via PS1 Classic? Last time we saw the Darkstalkers, when was it?
B? This is the one that I kept calling Darksiders. So I want to say yes. Darksiders 2.
Okay, yeah. He totally threw me off because Darksiders 2, huh?
Yeah.
Disqualified.
Oh.
No longer in business, so that is E.
Yeah. Now I'm going to say Night Warriors.
Okay. And Sage, you said?
I said B.
Correct answer. Wow, B. Darkstalkers 3.
Oh, that was the first one I was going to do until I heard there was another one that was on PSN.
Yeah, there was a PS1 game that just came out 2012, and after that, that was really the only time we saw Darkstalkers, the last generation, until this week. So speaking of Darkstalkers, name the character who has appeared in every single game dating back to the series' 1994 debut. Is that Donovan Blaine, Lilith QB or John Talbane? Are you guys big Darkstalkers fans?
Nope.
Sure like Darksiders, though.
Yeah. I'm going to say...
It's cute. Plain Jeremy. Payne.
I'm going to say A.
You're going to say Donovan?
The one whose name you can't pronounce, probably bad sign.
Yes, and John Taliban. Jesus, I don't know what's wrong with me today.
How
Jeremy?
About the lady with the boobies and the wings?
Lilith?
Yeah.
Or QB?
Wait, is there even one? Lilith. She was a choice, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Correct answer, John Talbane.
Nobody likes him.
Shit, I knew it.
Yes. One more Darkstalkers question before Jeremy goes nuts and says, I hate Darksiders.
I hate Darksiders.
A Sega Saturn port of Night Warriors, Darkstalkers Revenge, featured an appendix mode. Okay, besides being a useless
I was
the
just
going
to make a joke about being useless anatomy. You beat me to
so
it.
So what did appendix mode allow? What modification? A, allowing players to switch between the original soundtrack and remix songs. B, permitting players to adjust backgrounds. C, opponent colors could be changed. D, A, B, and C. Or E, B, and C only.
Wait, what?
E was the
oh
color and backgrounds.
So we got the original soundtrack and remix songs.
And C.
Permitting players to adjust backgrounds. And opponent colors could be changed.
B and C. Is that an option?
B and C, because it seems like it would be kind of too easy, or easy to change color palettes and stuff like that, but as soon as you have to load new music, they probably have to do some stupid loading screen. I'm going to say B and C.
A, B, and C was the correct answer. All three of those.
A also was the other thing I was going to add on.
Yeah, me too.
Yes.
You guys are appendix
nailed
legs.
Nailed it.
Number four, this week the release of Wrecking Crew for the 3DS offers an ability that was long overdue to Western gamers. What is it? A, Mario or Luigi can jump. B, the inclusion of 15 extra levels. C, saving and loading abilities for the level editor. Or D, an appearance by Spike, who many feel was the basis for Wario and offered one of the first minigames available on console.
That one.
No.
Just because it's longer?
No. Because the way that you phrased it, where something that was long overdue, kind of makes me feel like it's got to be jumping or saving. So I'm going to go with jumping, because I think that's the kind of thing people would really complain about.
You guys are not doing too well. Saving and loading abilities for the level editor.
I was going to tell Sage to do that one, so at least one of us could be right.
Yes.
I was
the Famicom had that ability.
I was just hoping that that wasn't the thing that was missing up until that point, because that just seems like gross oversight.
It on the WiiWare version, it was available. But I think you could hook your Famicom up to a tape recorder. And there was some kind of peripheral allow you to save over in Japan, not here. This week also sees the release of Slam Bolt Scrappers for PC, originally released for the PS3. Now, why is this somewhat of a resurrection for the game? A, the original release happened right before the PSN hacking incident. B, the original game was pulled because it didn't work with some older model PS3s. C, developer Firehose Games got involved in a dispute between PSN and XBLA exclusivity. Or D, the original release was pulled until a patch was released 26 days later.
That sounds really familiar. Is that the one with, like, there's two robot characters, and they're, like, cleverly named? Like, one is, like...
No, I believe that's the game that,
Someone else
What's
made.
His name? The actor, Shaun of the Dead. I think he
Oh,
was...
Simon Pegg.
Simon Pegg, yes. He was behind that one. No, it wasn't that one.
No. That sounds really familiar,
though. This is like a puzzler. Kind of looks a little bit like Tetris, but guys, robots that are going around, four player competitions on the same screen. Looks cool.
You know what? I think I have a copy of this, and I've never played it. And I'm sorry, Firehose Games. They're coming out with a new game, Dinosaurs Go Home, or Go Home,
yes.
Dinosaurs. It's all about, it's like a tower defense with a barbecue, so look forward
and
to that.
And it looks really good.
It does look cute.
Bomberman aesthetic. I got a code, and I can't wait to play it. It looks really cool.
They're doing beta right now, but anyway, good job, Firehose guys. Sorry I didn't play this game.
You got hosed.
Yeah, someone got hosed. Watch me get hosed right now by getting a total, I'm going to fail the entire trivia today. I'm going to say that it came out right before the PSN outage.
Okay, Sage?
That's what I said. That's A, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct answer. A. Good job, guys. Yeah. Redemption is yours.
Damn, I kind of wish I had failed all of them. Now I just have a really mediocre score.
Right. You
I didn't go you all didn't, the way.
Wow. You didn't hit perfection. No. So right now, let's take a break and do our new segment, Indie Outlook, with myself and Sai.
With myself. That's not pretentious.
Starring Robert Allen's Indie Outlook with Robert.
Yes. Let's do my...
I got called out on that one. Robert Allen.
All right.
Starring, hosted by your friend.
Introducing, featuring.
Written by Robert Allen.
You may know him from such things as the Tech Gaming Podcast.
Robert Allen, Gaming Podcast.
Jonathan Blow, you're welcome to come on anytime.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to the first episode of Indie Outlook, a new addition to the Tech Gaming Podcast. You know me, I'm Robert Desert Eagle Allen, and joining me is Sai, marketing consultant, media guru for Phoenix Online, Sinscape, and now us. Hello, Sai.
Hello, Robert. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Now, last December, you were a guest where I called you Say like an idiot. How does it?
Oh.
Yeah. How does it feel to be on the other side of things as a co-host now?
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. I just hope that. Don't regret it.
I won't. Well, now, before we delve right into the segment, I wanted to talk about the impetus for Indie Outlook. As our readers know, we've been covering the substantial industry releases, but one thing we haven't devoted enough attention to since a hole was left by our own Adam Tygier-Malecki a few years ago is a section that's devoted to some of those wonderful titles that are deserving of a little bit more attention. So that said, I wanted to make amends of our transgressions and venture into Indie Outlook. So Sai, before you kick things off, let's get things going with a code giveaway. So I wanted to give away, I have two copies of Cognition Episode 1.
Yes,
the Hangman. So all you have to do is just post in the thread your favorite episode in Phoenix Online's The Silver Lining series. Try to get the name right. That would help, right? Wouldn't it?
Are you nervous?
Maybe you're kicking me. Yeah, no. Maybe a little. Okay, so help me out, Sai. Tell me what's on your agenda.
All right.
Make me less nervous.
I'd like to start talking, first of all, about one of the latest events to affect the indie community. We had, a few months ago, a situation with Lace Mamba Global. Mm-hmm. And this has affected a few of my friends, particularly CBE Software. They just announced, like around February, that they had terminated their publishing agreement with Lace Mamba because they had these problems due to a breach of contract relating to the payments owed by Julia. Unfortunately, my friends were not the only ones caught up in this situation. We also had other friends like Amanita Design, Dadalik, the entertainment Colibri Games. Mm-hmm. all these developers wrote an open letter about this, and all this information can be found in the show notes eventually for all that want to read a little bit more about this. Now, the problem is that CVE is in a rough spot because this has affected them in more ways than we can actually, you know, describe right now. But we decided to go with a Julia Indiegogo campaign in order to produce an enhanced edition of one of their most known games in hopes, you know, to keep the company working and probably avoid bankruptcy. So contributing to this cause, of course, is going to make a world of difference in whether we have, you know, this talent around or not. So please and thank you, everybody, to, you know, stop by at least 5 minutes in this. About Julia, Julia is a beautiful adventure game. Sorry. It's a beautiful adventure PC game. The story centers around Rachel Manners. She's an astrobiologist. She's a member of an elite group of scientists chosen to do one of the most critical missions ever conceived on Earth. Now Rachel is alone. She's orbiting an unknown planet. Well, her companions are Julia, of course, the space probe artificial intelligence, and Mobot, a huge freaking robot. So basically, the story is about the journey of this fantastic trio and exploring the unknown solar system.
Awesome. Yeah, how much money have you helped raise for CBE?
Well, the highlights of the Indiegogo campaign, it's been quite a journey so far. Mm-hmm. We have managed to reach 20% of our goal in less than 24 hours.
Wow.
I'm very proud and happy, so happy to say that we got funded in less than a week. We got over $5,000 in a week just for Julia Enhanced Edition. Right now, thanks to this wonderful contribution and the support of everybody everywhere, we are working on stretch goals. And right now, we have got the information also available on the show notes for everybody to contribute. So please, one of the things that I will be forever thankful is that everybody listening right now, at least please just give them 5 minutes of your time. Go visit the link. And if you do not have any money to contribute right now, at least, you know, share the information with anybody who will, you know, be able to contribute.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. I like the way you said that. I'd tell them to get a second job. I'd be mean. But you're too nice for that. So tell me what else is going on with Cognition. There was a port recently.
Oh, yes. Cognition. That's right. We have got iPad out now, the iPad version, wow, on the Apple Store.
Awesome.
Episode 1 right now so far, but it's also pretty damn amazing, so you're also free to check it out.
One thing I wanted to do is talk about, I had mentioned Adam previously, and I love the guy like a brother, but sometimes he'd talk about these really obscure indies that I tried to play, but they just weren't to my taste, at least to that time. But that said, I remember...
Wait. Do you have something against indies?
No, nothing at all, but sometimes he'd talk about...
Do you
about
hate indies?
Yes, I do. No, I'm kidding. That's a complete lie. I just wanted to say that. No. I'm going to talk about an indie right now. One I totally loved. It was called Nightsfall. It was a couple of years ago, made by these trio of Southampton guys. And if I ever have not liked an indie, this one I totally fell in love with. And I love the development team. They're called Megadev.
Oh, yes.
Yes, they are a great bunch.
I've heard about them before.
Yes, probably from listening to me rattle on about them. They made two sequels. It was a little bit of a puzzler, a little bit Mr. Driller, and really fun. They went on to create some games for both Adult Swim and Kongregate. Some things from One Man and a Dinosaur, Time for Cat, Big Time Butter Baron, and their magnum opus. They're really cool. Their best game was House of Dead Ninjas. And originally, this was an Adult Swim game. You could go to the site and play it. And now a sequel has been ported to Steam for a low, low price. It was about £3 or in US dollars, about $4.89. That was the current deal. May have gone up to $6. And if you are, as I suspect you and the listeners are, a fan of retro games, I really implore you to try this game out. As I mentioned, you can still check out Super House of Dead Ninjas on Adult Swim for free. And then you can, you know, cough up a few bucks to get the enhanced version. I mentioned it's a little bit retro. It totally just evokes this feeling of nostalgia. The graphics look a little 16-bit, but they have this refresh
rate. They're amazing, though.
Yeah, they are. They just have like so much charm in character. I love the... Did you get to the screen, the continue screen? Did you
Not
get to
yet.
That part? No, you're still playing. You're a lot better than me.
Yeah, Chris. Yeah. You know, but what you're talking, of course, I'm playing.
Oh, you break my heart. Anyway, the runs at 60 frames per second, like you never saw a Mega Drive or a Genesis game. And sonically, they really nailed that kind of bassy feel you'd get when you'd plug in a Genesis into a hi-fi system. I mean, it's just this fat kind of full bass. So it will warm your heart. The game itself is based on a relatively simple concept. You guide the protagonist. She's called the Crimson Ninja. And she goes down these levels, these procedurally generated dungeon. It's called, the actual name is the Ziggurat of Infinium. And you use a variety of tools.
Wait. What was it like again? What was the name again?
Ziggurat of Infinium.
Why are you laughing?
Because I always stumble. Just, we'll call it the dungeon. We'll call it the dungeon. So anyway.
All right. Let's go with that.
And tools like monkey wrenches, like you're throwing at me right now. You have these variety. You have like bombs and shuriken, all these type of things. You can single jump. You can double jump. You have a downward attack, and you can wall slide. And then beyond these basic tools, you unlock new weapons, which force you really to play differently. So there is a little bit of replay value in there. Actually, a lot of replay value. One thing feeling this description doesn't convey is the game's sense of speed. You're constantly being prodded by this timer, and the Crimson Ninja, she's always just moving, jumping around, and I really like the sense of momentum. I think a lot of people that are used to, a lot of gamers used to contemporary type of speed, one of the things we have to do now in many games is worry about controlling the camera. But one of the brilliant things about 2D games that emanate from this era is that they allow us to just concentrate on a huge amount of on-screen threats all at once, and so you find yourself really immersed in the game. So, you know, Super House of Dead Ninjas isn't really far removed from that particular era, just the feeling that evokes great sense of speed, and as I mentioned, that momentum when you plunge down towards the boss's chambers. Really cool boss design, multiple ways of attacking the boss, just all around a great time. So in short, Megadev, Super House, and then Dead Ninjas, about the best low-priced, under $10 Steam purchase out there right now.
Man, you're a fan. Did you get commission for this?
Only about $50. But I did give... No, I'm kidding. That's another lie. I'm lying today. But I did give 5 codes for the game, which I will give away. So...
Yay.
Yeah. Cool. What should we do to have people win a code of Super House of Dead Ninjas?
Maybe comment.
Comment?
Yeah.
Who their favorite ninja is in popular culture? Who's your favorite ninja? So,
I'll get back and do that. I don't have a favorite
ninja.
You
don't have a favorite ninja? Everyone's got a favorite ninja. No?
What a weird question, Robert. I have no idea. I don't have a favorite ninja.
Okay. So be better than Sai. Have a favorite ninja, put that in the show notes. So that wraps up this week's Indie Outlook. Don't forget to comment about the show, win those prizes, and we'll see you in a few weeks.
Thank you, everybody. That's all for today.
That's gross, because now it's like teabagging.
What?
Men-sitzel.
Okay, you're talking about teabagging.
Very
nice. I'm talking about opening the mailbag. And we got a question
from
Stormlord.
I'm just saying the mailbag.
Okay. You guys knock it off. Because we got a serious...
talking about scrotums.
Oh, my goodness. We got a query, serious, curious question from Stormlord. What franchise needs to die, and what defunct one needs to make a comeback?
Ooh.
So franchise needs to die, first of all. Let's go around, round table. Tell me.
Jeremy, you start.
BioShock needs to die.
Ooh. What the fuck? What?
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding, you guys. I just
That's
really
not even funny.
Actually, oh, I really...
BioShock 1 and BioShock 2, I felt like BioShock 2 was as good as the original. Full stop. Bam.
Full stop. Oh, okay.
So I think BioShock needs to make a comeback sometime soon.
But Infinite is coming out. What are you talking about?
Yes! Bitch, granted.
That's cheating. But wait, I know what needs to die. I know. What's their faces? The do Guitar Hero, because they're terrible.
That did die.
Did they?
Wish
granted. Yay, wish granted.
Yes.
The Magical Mailbag, starring Robert Allen.
All your wishes come true.
What about you, Robert? Maybe you can wish for, like, I don't know.
Something that's been dead for a long time.
Darksiders. You can wish for Darksiders to die.
He wants to make it back.
I didn't really like the last Need for Speed. And I don't really want the franchise to die, but I didn't have as much fun as I did with Forza Horizon. So it at least needs to regroup and get Criterion back together and give me the crash mode that I deserve and want. So how about that?
All right.
Defunct One. What Defunct One needs to make a comeback? Wild Arms.
How about... it's not really defunct or anything, but I would kind of like to see a new Patapon.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Pata-what?
What's up?
Patapon.
What is a Patapon?
Oh, pata.
You need to get off this podcast right now. Pata,
bum, 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 bum. Fever!
Wow, that's way too good.
I have no idea what that is.
I played so much Patapon. Oh my god.
Do you guys remember Rise of the Kasai?
Yes, I actually have an unopened copy of Rise of the Kasai and The Mark of Kree. I haven't played either of them.
Yeah, that was good. It's good stuff.
Didn't we decide on a previous podcast that those are some characters that need to come into PlayStation All-Stars?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, that should happen.
I was also a fan and only got one shot because I'm a big Jet Li fan. Rise to Honor. I like that game.
Was that the one where you would just point the stick in the particular, like the attack, like the right stick would go in a certain direction and he would just start doing kung fu moves? Or am I thinking of something else? I feel like that was the Jet Li game where you would just sort of point the stick in a particular direction and he would just start doing some badass attacks.
I don't remember it being that automatic. There was a little bit of time, but I liked it for its time.
Mm.
So you guys, what needs to be reinvigorated?
Yeah. Devil May Cry.
Jeremy.
What? Jeremy. Troll. A real thing.
Okay, all right.
Wish granted.
With Francis.
The douchebag mailbag podcast.
You're going to say Def Jam something.
Yeah.
Jed Def Jam fighting.
Whatever. Oh, they know. Donkey Kong.
We need another 50 Cent game.
No. What?
Can I also say Valkyria Chronicles? Love to see more of that.
Yeah. I mean, don't we need to get that third one here in the U.S.?
That's, yeah. So you know what it's not going to happen.
You know what I found out is a ton of people hate Valkyria Chronicles 2.
Why?
A bunch of people on it. I don't know, because they don't like the characters or something. You know what? Fine, whatever. Honestly, were the characters in Valkyria Chronicles 1 that awesome? I mean, honestly, let's be really honest with ourselves here.
But to me, I don't know. I could see the characters, maybe the setting, the high school setting, rub people the wrong way. But the actual mechanics of the game were so compelling that it's just a little easy to look over those.
By the way, Robert, wish granted, Valkyria Chronicles is coming back as an in-browser card game. Remember that? Did you hear about that?
No, but that's not turning my crank, Jeremy.
This is like a monkey paw wish. You got exactly what you wanted, and now the corpse of Valkyria Chronicles is knocking on your door.
Wow. Alfred Hitchcock just came over.
Mm. No, that's actually the monkey paw fable, where the woman wishes for her son to be alive again, and they're like scraping at the door. The son was dead.
Yeah.
Monkey paw! Hey, speaking of monkey paw, I bet they're working on something that needs to be... What are they doing? Class of Heroes? Class of Heroes 2? I'm trying to bring this back around.
I guess this is as good as mine.
No, I know it's more of a rhetorical question. They are working on Class of Heroes 2. It's that Kickstarter that failed, and now they're bringing a physical version out.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what kind of douchebag thing is that to do, to ask a rhetorical question we don't know the answer to, and then be like, oh, I know the question.
It's pretentious.
I didn't.
We don't do that on Robert Allen's podcast.
I guess I sort of... I threw it. It's like like a trapeze act, and I threw something out there to you, and nobody was there. So I fell.
Yeah, no, it's more like a trapeze act, and you pulled the trapeze away right as someone was about to grab it. It's more like that.
That's awesome.
Can I say something that's going to irritate a lot of people? Just thought of.
Yeah.
Franchise needs to die. Call of Duty.
Yeah, now, I'm okay with that.
Hold on. Now, what is your qualifying?
Too many, too soon. Peaked in quality.
Cash cow.
Have they?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not really a believer in the milked franchise syndrome.
Modern Warfare 3, I'll be on the fence for. Great game, but Black Ops 2, not as good. So
I think all cash cow franchises should die, and I think any franchise that can make a game that has some kind of legitimate learning curve and adequate difficulty level should be reborn. That's my general statement.
So basically anything that's fun should go away, and anything that...
No! What? Like, Rock Band managed to be a fun franchise without becoming completely overbloated and crappy in quality, unlike Guitar Hero. So Rock Band good, Guitar Hero bad. That's the rubric.
I guess. All right, I want to argue with you on that.
That was said in a tone, meaning I don't agree with you, but I'm tired right now.
Or I begrudgingly agree with you.
No, I don't think there was much agreement in there.
Or I just don't want to get into a pissing match about peripherals with guitars and things like that.
Yeah, I think that's closer to the truth.
Hey, speaking of which, JRPG Lova asks, what's the one piece of extra hardware that no hardcore gamer should live without?
I'm going to say...
I've heard that everything's better with Kinect.
Jeremy. I'm going to say probably the most obvious answer is a nice, good, quality television. HDTV.
Oh, come on. All right.
If you're gonna drop money on a peripheral, I mean, the visual elements.
He's talking video game things, right?
Right.
Not... See, what about like a 3D TV?
Jeremy, I'm not with you on the 3D board train. I got off about four stops ago. And...
You know what I'm surprised you didn't say? I thought you were going to say a Fight Stick.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
Because here's the ironic thing. I have all of this shit in my house. I don't have a Fight Stick. That's the one thing I don't have.
Mm, okay. That's right. You got like, what, 3 U draws, but no Fight Stick.
I've got U draws. I've got DK bongos. I've got. Geez,
I think I actually have 3 sets of DK bongos.
Man, I paid $45 a pop for those DK bongos, too. There ain't no way I'm getting rid of those. I'm going to bronze those things. For the 2 games that support them.
Weren't there 3?
So Jungle Beat, which is right. A good one. And then Donkey Kong 1.
Donkey Kong 1 and 2.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So fine, 3 games.
Don't make me burn you on Robert Allen's Tech Gaming podcast. Again.
Burned at the stake.
Permanent suspension.
No hardcore gamer should live without.
For PC gaming, I actually have to say getting a gaming keyboard pretty crucial because it makes a lot of.
Do you mean a mechanical keyboard?
Typewriter.
No, I mean like a keyboard that's set up for gaming, so it's got like embedded macros and the buttons are in better placement order, and you know they're usually just, and your volume controls are all right there, and you've got a joystick toggle that like deactivates certain buttons, and it makes your life a lot easier.
How about this? Here's something that nobody would expect. How about the little clip-on extenders for different things on the controller? Have you ever used those? Like the stick extenders?
Yes, I have, and. You know, I'm a creature of habit. They may have offered a little... Well, one was like this little plus, you know, type of shape. And
right.
I could tell it could offer something, but I was such a creature of habit that I got used to my existing controller, and it took a little while for me to adapt and see any real advantage on that.
Mm. You know what I use on my DualShock 3 is I use the little clip-on...
Yeah, I have those.
And I really like them. They're really cool. I don't know, though. I guess what's the one piece of extra hardware that no hardcore gamer should live without? That's a really good question.
Yeah.
Man. You know, I will say, I don't know about not living without it, but we were talking about racing and stuff like that. And I, of all of the peripherals and things that, that I've owned, the most noticeable difference for me was when I hooked up. I mean, something that, that I saw videos of people doing it, wanted to have that experience, went out and did it. It's really cool to have a good racing wheel for a driving simulator. I mean, eventually you can start doing stuff that you could never do with a controller. I mean, it's just following, you're just following people right on the bumper without actually making contact and stuff like that. Like, that's really cool. That's like, it's a great feeling when you can use that to, I don't know though. Like, I couldn't recommend that to everybody though. That's kind of an expense.
We got a question.
You know, actually,
we got a question from the sick bay.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Blue Swim, yes. If you could release one rare game through Virtual Console, PSN, XBLA, what would it be? Or very own Blue Swim. Asking,
I have an actual good answer for this, and it's going to be the best answer, so I want to go last.
Okay.
I would say Mario Legend of the Seven Stars.
Return Fire.
General Chaos.
Oh, Jeremy, damn
the
you.
The best answer ever.
Early RTS, yes.
I'm
kind of
bag.
With you on that one.
Yep.
Who made that one? The people who made Rampage, Game Refuge.
Game Refuge.
Oh God, yeah, that's a good one.
Yep.
I don't know. I still like Return Fire.
Shut
I
up.
Hold something dear to. Have you played Return Fire?
No, because I played General Chaos instead. I need no Return Fire.
Oh.
Jesus Christ!
Double secret suspension.
Double secret, triple dog dare.
You're both suspended and renaming it to Blue Swim's podcast. He's not
it's the Blue Swim Billy Aiken podcast.
Montezuma's Revenge cast.
So, outro, if you liked what you heard today, you'll probably love what we write. Head on over to techgaming.com for the latest reviews, previews, discussions, tentacles. Who put that in? New release info. Check us out on Google Currents where you can read us without the ads, and we promise not to cry about it, unlike those babies at another website. So also join over 2,500 others and like us on our new and improved Facebook page. Much appreciation to Sai for improving that. She's been working her magic.
Ooh.
That was the magic sound.
That's forgetting to turn off the damn phone.
Hey, listen. You can also follow us on Twitter. You can follow Robert Desert Eagle Allen at tech_gaming. You can follow Sean Kirkland at Sean Nola. Sage Morris Green at Samarage. Eric Blue Swim. Send him some well wishes and maybe some wet wipes at Blue Swim. Jeremy Lamont, me at Jeremy_Lamont. And Cy at Cy OMGWTF.
And send Eric Blue a new pair of underpants.
Yeah.
We don't want him to end up like Wimp.
You know, here's the thing. He goes commando.
Jeremy, I don't want to know how you know these things.
I don't feel good making bad jokes about poor Blue when he's homesick that are just not fair. He's not here to defend himself.
No, it's true. I can tell what people are wearing just by looking. You want to know what Sage is wearing right now?
Yes, I want to know what you think I'm wearing, Jeremy.
What she's not wearing right now.
Are you saying that I'm naked?
Good night, everybody.
Sector, slow down. You're going to get a callus.
Jesus Christ.
Bye.
On both hands. On both. Bye.
And on a foot.
Sector, we love you.
You're listening to episode 12 decks.
Stop recording.
Wait, can we have a bloopers reel like once a month?